Hey, if you're looking for a great podcast, tune in to the Linux Link Tech Show every Wednesday night. Everything from open source to Linux to awesome interviews. Wednesday night, the Linux Link Tech Show. Don't miss it.
Big O! Showtime!
The Linux Link Tech Show.
The Linux Link Tech Show
is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link.
Link it up.
Link it up and take it away.
Take it away.
Here we are, episode 119. Dan's playing with his configuration while the show is going. Hopefully he doesn't blow out the connection and everything else.
I'm not playing.
Blow out his butt, that's about it. Hopefully he doesn't blow out his ass tonight, but hey.
Hopefully. How you doing, Alan?
Not too bad. Better than I was earlier this week.
A little under the weather, are you?
Yeah. Like I said, like we were talking before the show there, I just felt like crap, so. I'd rather feel like crap by myself.
Yeah, not for nothing, man. This weather is freaking killing us. One day it's freaking 20 degrees, the next day it's 60 degrees. It's like up and down, man. It's like your body can't get acclimated to it.
What? Yesterday morning, wasn't it?
This morning it was 60 out? This morning it was 60 degrees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
I don't know. I didn't get up there really early.
Yeah. It's damn early. Dan, no webcam tonight? We're saving our bandwidth?
Since it's the two of us, we're not going to do the webcam, but we will. You could do the screenshot stuff if you want to. If you want to.
If you want.
It's there. So.
Another exciting week, man. Lots of things to talk about tonight. We got Dan's GP2X. We got Alan playing with his video on his PSP. I was playing around with some VMware this week, and hopefully Link joins us. He was working crazy hours all week, so he may or may not join. Hopefully he comes on for a bit.
We'll see. What'd I do with the code? I bopped something up. Oh well.
Yeah, he was on IRC before, but
was he?
He said somebody had to call back at work. At least I thought he was.
That sucks, man, when you got to work like a ton of hours for work.
Yeah, he's doing the overnight stuff now, right?
I think he was doing that all week.
Ah.
So, Dan.
I hate it overnight.
How's the toy, Dan?
Let's get to what everybody wants to hear. Good day, Alan. We're cutting you up. No. The GP2X finally arrived.
Finally.
It
took freaking long enough.
Yeah, well, with the holidays and everything. But they got it out to me. Bonus was they had flashed it with the latest firmware. So I had the most recent firmware when it arrived. It came Thursday of last week. And I thought about just giving a list of pros and cons, but I'm going to give you a little more of a blow-by-blow of how the GPX and I got along for the first, 6 days so far. All right, I was really psyched when this thing came. I was like, this is going to be great. It's going to be fun. I had done some research on it, and I heard that there were some iffy things with the battery. Video formats might be problematic and stuff like that. So I had two AA alkaline batteries downstairs, and they were 1,000 mAhs. And this also came with two alkaline AA batteries. So I slapped those suckers in. I brought it immediately upstairs, and I wanted to see how it was going to actually work. I popped in my SD card and fired it up, came up, and the first thing I noticed was I had to get used to the interface. Okay, it's a little weird. You move about using the joystick. Okay, well, for those who don't know, it's probably about 2/3 the size of a PlayStation Portable. You want to see it?
Yeah.
It's about 2/3 the size of a PlayStation Portable, maybe almost about the same height. and I think just a hair thicker. It's more like a Game Boy Advance, is what it is. And it has a joystick on the left, and then it has underneath the and then over on the right, it has four buttons, A, B, X, and Y, in a diamond fashion. And then underneath those, there's a start and select button. And then at the top, there's a left and right button at the very top of the machine where your fingers would be at the top. I'll probably post a screenshot of this when I'm done talking because I'm lazy right now. This would be a perfect time for the damn webcam to be up to post that screenshot of this. Anyway, you navigate the main menu with the joystick, and then you would use the B button to descend into one of those menus. And once you're descending into a menu, you can use the X button to ascend back up one level, except if you get to the top level of that section. Once you get to the top level of that section, to get out of there, you actually have to press the start button to bring you back to the main menu.
That's weird.
Yeah, if you're in any of the sub-menus or sub-directories, you can automatically go to the top by pressing the start button. You'll be back to the main menu. It is a Linux-based device. By default, the SD flash is formatted for VFAT, and of course it is a little slow copying files to it. It plugs into a USB port. It comes with a little cable. You pop that in. It recognizes a USB mass storage device, and you can start copying your stuff over. First thing I did was copy over some audio files, our show, the AUG of our show, a couple of video files, and the show played perfectly. I had absolutely no problems. I grabbed XMAME for the GP2X and some of my ROMs I threw over there. I also grabbed a few other games, and PDF View is a PDF reader. And I pulled down the manual for the GP2X because the manual that it comes with it is a it's Korean and English manual, and it's very sparse. I mean, there's absolutely really no information in there. It does not tell you anything about what formats it'll play, what formats it won't play, and this and that. So I pulled down the GP2X manual, and as I was trying to get accustomed to the navigation and how to do this and that, I tried to pull up the GP2X manual in the PDF view. Now, when they said on the comments about PDF view that it was slow, I didn't think it was going to be glacially slow. I mean, it is really slow. And I also pulled over some Tux magazines, too, to see if I could read them on there. The PDF view is extremely slow, almost unusable
slow. It's not too bad, man. I'm going through the menus, and it's not difficult.
Once you understand how to navigate, if you read the instructions a little bit, you wouldn't have to sit there wondering why you're at the top level pressing X to go up to the main menu and it's not working.
The only thing I don't like is if you're in, say, a particular file, it doesn't let you, like, scroll through, like, say, like, you're watching a video, you hit stop or pause, and then scroll through what all of the ones you have on here.
I'm going to get to that in a minute. Okay. I'll talk about that. Okay, so where was I? Oh, XPDF view is really slow. And it doesn't open all the PDF files. It would not open the Tux magazines. So it was almost unusable for me on the device. Plus, the screen's pretty small, and the zoom in and out is like, it just wasn't working the way I wanted it to. Next thing I tried, of course, was videos. So I clicked on a video. Every single video I tried to play would not work. Would absolutely not work. I tried Theora, of course, and I knew Theora wasn't going to work. I tried MPEG-4, MPEG, AVI. Everything I could think of that format would not work. Everything I had. I was like, what the hell is going on?
What do you got to do?
And then I learned the worst part about this thing, all right? After using this for about an hour and a half, not even an hour, battery died.
That sucks.
I went through two AA's.
So what'd you do, get some lithium batteries?
Well, what I did is I put in the two AA's that came with it. And again, I did some more research around. I found a script for MEncoder that would encode the video, any video that you had, into the right format. It takes DivX, basically. If you can do put
MPEG
it in 4. XVIG or DivX. Not straight MPEG-4. It has to be in like a DivX wrapper.
Well, DivX is AVI, is what the file extension is.
Right, but it has to be. It won't take a regular AVI file.
Right, a raw AVI file is a big file.
But it will only take something.
Did you try loading up one of those videos I gave you, which are XVIDs?
Which video was that?
There's a show. They're like 350 megapixels.
No, I didn't try that.
We should try it after the show. Let's see if it works.
I tried a ton of different. Once I got the script and I ran the script, any video I ran through the script would then play on here. Okay, so that was pretty cool. I played some audio files. I had to go out or whatever that night. And by the time I was out listening to this thing in the car for about a total of an hour, hour and a half. And by the time I got home, the batteries were just about dead. This thing sucks batteries worse than a digital camera.
Worse than the iPod?
This thing was... And the thing is, it's got very strict battery requirements. If you are not using 2,500 mAh batteries, forget it. This thing has absolutely no life to it. Okay? I went out to Radio Shack. And I bought some rechargeable batteries, and they didn't have what I wanted, so I ended up getting the 1,000, another set of 1,000. They were only a couple bucks, so I put those in. Okay, the life on those gets sucked out really fast. I went to Walmart, and I picked up a four-pack of 25 mAh Energizer rechargeables, and these suckers, when I put them in, last me about 4 or 5 hours at least. I mean, I can use just one set of batteries at work all day. If you play videos, it'll go a little faster. But once I was down with two of these, last me all day.
That's pretty good. How much are those?
Two sets. These were $9.99.
So they're expensive.
Yeah. Well, for four. So, I mean, a little pricey, but you're going to get a lot of use out of them.
So you're talking $5 a clip. It takes two, you said?
Right. $5 a clip. But you do rechargeable, man. You just slap them in and
that's
you just recharge
bad,
them all. I got the cheapo recharger. That would charge these, not the 15-minute one, because the 15-minute one, they wanted like $20 for it.
I should probably pick some of these up for my iAudio. The iAudio runs forever, man. I really get like 20 hours of playback on them. It eats up more if I'm recording.
Yeah, so these things, these work great. Now, the thing is, this because of the requirements of it, the batteries, once you get down like half a charge on the 1,000s, The batteries aren't dead, okay? They'll work in other devices, but they're not going to work in here. You're not going to get anything.
That thing needs a full charge.
And when it does start to run out of battery life, boy, it gets. You think the thing's exploding. Because like, it just like melts on the screen. Any video you're watching just goes, it just melts away. And it's like, what the hell happened? But it just means that there's not enough.
Can you use that plug-in with a regular battery, some kind of battery adapter, or you know?
Yes. Adapter? Well, this is a 3.3 volt 1 amp adapter. It requires, and they sell an adapter for $24 on this thing. But you can buy one at Fry's for $9.99, a multi function adapter.
Have you got one?
I have one coming in. That's one of the first things I ordered.
Because if you're just sitting at your desk, you know, it's easy just to plug
right.
it in.
It's annoying. And with the TV out, this has TV out support, and I got the TV out cables. It doesn't make sense to sit there and run that on battery. You just plug it into the wall, and I can watch anything through there on the TV out. TV out, some of the games play through there. MAME doesn't play through there. It's mainly for videos. They're working on firmware updates for being able to use a TV out for anything. So that'll be cool when that happens. One of the other annoying features that I don't like about this is if you're playing an audio file and you shut it off, all right, it doesn't save your place. Okay? You can't save your place. Good to hear
you,
Link.
That's disgusting.
Same thing with the video. When you had said that you can't look through the other videos you have while this one's while the one's playing, if you want to see what other videos you have, you got to stop this, and then you can. It doesn't retain where you were, which is unfortunate.
That sucks.
It does. If you're using this in a car, it's a little difficult. Like if you're driving and you wanted to fast forward or reverse, it's a little more difficult.
And you're trying to watch videos in the car?
Yeah. Well, no, not the videos.
That's you. You're the guy.
Yeah, that's me. No, like I was listening to Infonomicon 53 today, and he was saying something, and I wanted to rewind it. So it's kind of funky because it's not like an iPod or an MP3 player where you got that little – easy navigation with a single thumb.
Scroll,
you know, you
got to
like bring this up, and you got to be careful not to hit the upper buttons, the top left or right buttons, because left will advance it forward, right will advance it back a file.
So it has a fast forward then.
Well, it's not really a fast forward. This goes one fast forward. It's all controlled through here.
Okay.
So if I press left,
it'll
if
fast
I press
forward.
Right
it'll fast forward.
On the joystick, it'll fast forward through. Left will go reverse. So it's kind of hard to navigate that if you're driving and holding the wheel with your left hand, trying to push it with
Dan,
the right hand.
I don't think it's meant to be operated in that fashion.
No, I don't think it is either. But it was, you know, taking the battery and the video support from the get-go was very frustrating at that point when I first started using this. I was like, man, what the hell did I get myself into with this? All right, it was really frustrating. But once I found that script to convert the videos, just about everything I threw at it. The only problem I had was the link. I asked Link to send me an example of a file from the Neuros Audio by default, which encodes in MPEG-4. Right, Link?
Link died.
Right.
And he sent it to me, and I popped it on here. It would not play it. I had to use my script to convert it. The odd thing was, okay, I got no audio from it on my machine. So when I played it on my machine, I had no audio. I played it through MPlayer.
That sucks.
I played it through VLC. I had no audio. But I played it through Zine, and I had the audio. It seems that the Arch developers of the MPlayer package and the VLC did not throw some kind of support or some older support for FAC or FAD in there. I was getting FAD errors is what it was.
So what did you do? Just compile from source?
I didn't do anything with that. Link sent me a copy of it in AVI. Right? Was it AVI you sent me? He re-encoded it.
Yeah, I did a little conversion on it. Yep.
And then when I did that, I can get the audio.
And what you used? Like, you used a script to do the conversion? FFmpeg?
No, I just used mEncoder to reconvert it real fast.
So, yeah, mEncoder, everything I've thrown at the mEncoder, window media files, AVI files, MPEG-4, MPEGs, they've all encoded without a problem. I mean, damn, I was not able to use it under Ubuntu, so I tried it on my Arch box over here, this, what is it, a P3500? And, alright, yeah, 500 or 450 or 500, and no, it's P3450, and it converted it, no problem. And when I pulled it over here, the audio wasn't in sync with the video, like it should be, but the problem with that was the batteries I was using, I think, because when I got the better batteries and I used that, used the same video, I had no problem playing it. When I played it on my Ubuntu machine, I had no problem playing it. And because the mEncoder would not encode the videos on Ubuntu the way I wanted it to, it encouraged me to move to Arch a lot faster, which I did over the weekend. But to stick with the review of the GP2X, it's a pretty cool device once you get through some of the limitations of it. Once you get down to past the limitations, once you have everything that you need to get this thing to work properly, watching the videos is really cool. I mean, I like being able to sit downstairs or wherever I want and watch some of the stuff, you know, catch up on the Tassin, Infonomicon, all that stuff.
So once you got it going, it was...
Yeah, it was great. I could plug it into the TV. Once I get the adapter, I'm going to use that more because I could watch all that stuff I'd like to on the TV. I also have a multi-card reader coming because I figure, why am I going to waste battery life? Yeah, that's where you plug in through the USB. Why am I going to waste battery life plugging this thing into my system so I could just dump stuff on the card? I'm going to get a multi-card reader so that no matter where I am, I can dump stuff on there a lot easier, not worry about wasting any of the battery. MAME and some of the games on there, it's pretty fun to play. Not all the MAME games play, all the ROMs. It's a pretty old version of MAME that they got running on there. I think they're going to look into updating it. So
is this the video out?
No, video out's on the top. Video out is right there.
Okay.
I think the video out plug is really whack. Okay, what you get is you get two audio jacks. Okay, but they're female, and you get an S video jack coming out.
That's odd.
And it's about each cable is about foot long. Now I lucked out because I have a switch downstairs, a multi switch that I can, you know, I hook up my DVD player, the GameCube, and the TiVo all into this thing, so I can switch around what I want. And you know, I lucked out. I bought a Switch, and it has an S-video input on it, which is great. And then I already have the audio composite cables, the males, coming from the back of the TV into this Switch. So what I just do is I plug the main out feed, you know, the out, into the female feeds from the TV out, and then I just plug the S-video into one of the inputs, and, you know, I'm good to go. But that was kind of annoying. You got to be careful with the TV out cable, though. If you jostle it a little bit, it'll get loose and it'll screw up the picture on the TV. And it'll look like things are going wonky. It'll go like black and white. It'll change different colors. Do some all sorts of weird things. But so that's pretty cool. I think, you know, what this really has going for it is a very fresh and eager development community out there, you know, slapping stuff together for this thing. I hope to see a whole lot more. That's what would really make this device fly. I'm not seeing a lot of commercial stuff for it yet. Their GP32 had a nice chunk of games that commercial developers made for it. The GP2X does not seem to have that yet. Hopefully that's coming. There's been issues with Game Park, the company, releasing the source code for the firmware. They were pretty late on releasing the initial source codes. I think they've gotten a lot better. You can get the source code now. You can get the development environment. Probably the best place to go for this is gp32x.com.
And it's a pretty international audience that supports it and uses it?
Yeah. It seems to be pretty big in the UK. I think there's a nice Australian development going on there, or people from Australia. In the United States, so it's pretty good. You'll definitely want to, you know, if you're going to purchase one of these things, if you want to do some more research, go over to the GP32X.com website. Look through their forums. I'll say one thing. The GP2X.com website, the Game Park Holding website, really sucks. Okay,
what's that, the official?
Their official website. They have a forum on there that is like got to be the worst forum I've ever seen. It's non-threaded. It's hard to navigate. It's hard to even find it, actually. You got to go through support and stuff like that. It seems like every time they post stuff for downloads, it's posted into this forum. So it's really wacky. And the one day the site was borked. Went over there and they're running it on a Microsoft server.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Speaking of Microsoft servers, not to interrupt you, but I was on the Linux World Expo website and the thing was completely down, and it said could not connect socket IIS server.
Yeah, that's pretty much
the
same
thing.
That pulled
me out, man. That totally pissed me off when I saw that.
But yeah, it's an interesting device. It's something for 100.
That kind of sucks, huh?
Yeah, $179. It'll cost
that's
you.
That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, plus you know, it's going to run you about $20 shipping and handling. It's not a bad device. It plays all the audio formats I've thrown at it. I've only thrown AUG and MP3. The video, like I said, once I have that, the script, which I'll post in the forum, it works great. And then I guess we're getting close to guest time, so I'll save my Arch stuff for later.
Link, how's it going? Wow, what a delay, man.
Good. How about you guys?
That's a long freaking
delay.
Well,
it's not going good, but it's better now that I'm on the show instead of working.
Been busy all day?
How long
whenever you're
delay
not working,
we have
it's always
tonight?
Better.
What's that?
It comes and goes.
Is the audio really choppy? I'll take
it's
that.
Pretty bad.
Just dropping completely out there every once in a while. Too.
Bandwidth, man. It's all about bandwidth.
I don't know what we're going to do about that when our guest comes on.
We'll have to force those guys off.
Well, chances are I'm going to have to drop out again on and off anyway because I still have work calling me about some issues that they're having.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Screw work.
Quit. Dump your wife. Go fishing. Remember that commercial from Ice House? Fallon dumped his wife. She'd end up on the permanent Tim McGraw train. Right, Alan?
World tour.
That's it.
I'm checking out some of these screenshots.
She'd be the groupie.
I'm checking out screenshots of the Nokia 77, which is that tablet that's been reviewed by Doc Searles in this month's Linux Journal. Looks interesting. There's like a little thing. You can type out some stuff. It's got a web browser, an email client. It runs an embedded version of Opera. It's expensive, though. It goes for $350. It plays video and audio. It's a lot of money, though. And supposedly they sell them at CompUSA, so I'm going to have to stop in just to check it out at the one by my office. And it supposedly runs on Linux. It's running Linux, so.
Yeah, I've heard one of the downsides. What was that? Was that another one where the battery life is pretty short?
I'm not sure. Gorkon was checking it out, and I've been chatting with him on the RC about it.
See, that's the thing. I mean, I know, like, Alan has the PlayStation Portable. It seems to play a whole lot of audio and video format.
The video's nice on the PlayStation
Portable.
Yeah,
it is. It's really nice. And that's frustrating that a company like this puts out a Linux, you know, essentially video game player, and it has so, it only, it's such limited video support. I mean, one thing will work. One thing. One! Why? Oh, that was too loud. Why?
That was a couple episodes ago.
Nothing's perfect, man.
Why? Why? They gotta get this video crap together. It's horrible.
The Nokia looks like it's got nice video and stuff. I want to check it out just to see what it is. It's not a game player, but it has network capability. It's more like a...
I'll tell you what, speaking of video...
You go, Pat.
Oh, that's special, Dan. what do you think Dan has, one of the first things he has on his little toy? You guys can probably guess what he has.
Prawn.
Shrimp?
I showed that to my wife. I said,
got some kind of porno going on.
I said, well, she's, what do you have that on there for? I said, oh, I just tried that. You know, it's an MPEG video.
Just
I wanted
to check
test
out,
the, out
see, if it works.
See if it would actually convert properly. And then there's this guy that comes up.
Oh, he's playing you, Link.
All right, go ahead, Link. You can talk about the thing I'm playing.
The thing you're playing? Are you playing the video that I sent you?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Well, here's the deal. I'll try and keep it short because I know that, you know, we're tight on time and we got a good guest coming on. I promised everybody that I would do a review of the Neuros MPEG 4 recorder, and I wanted to hold to my word real quick and do a quick review on it. I have some better information now, and I keep forgetting to do it on the show, so let me do it real fast. The Neuros MPEG 4 recorder is a very small, probably twice the size of a pack of cards, right? Like width-wise. If you set two packs of cards down on it, two decks of cards on a table, put them right next to each other, that's about the size of this device. Very small, really neat, nifty little device. Does all kinds of video recording from composite video sources. And my whole take on this thing was that it would be the coolest thing to do for people who are doing a video cast. And let me just put the link up on the IRC. Real quick, if you check that link out, that's going to get you right to the MPEG 4.2 recorder, which is the one they sent me to review. Or you can just go to www.neurostechnology.com, neurostechnology.com, or neurosaudio.com also resolves in there. And you'll be able to find it off their page. But like I said, really neat little thing. Has a bunch of different ways to. It's almost like a little DV recorder, almost like a digital video VCR kind of thing. The video modes that it has in there, you can record. It has three different modes. There's a TV VGA mode, QVGA, and a WQVGA. Now the TV VGA mode is a 640 by 480. Size video stream that it records, and you can pick like different quality settings, economic, normal, fine, and super fine. And of course, you know, as you go up the scale there, it tends to eat more and more of your space off of your media cards, and the picture will get better and better and better incrementally. However, the normal, it really isn't bad, you know, to watch a show on. And you also have, what was the next one? QVGA. Now, QVGA and WQVGA are the ones that are primarily designed, I guess, for you to be able to, this is like a you to be able to capture some video footage and immediately just push it right over to your PlayStation Portable. QVGA is the one for that, at 320 by 240 for a resolution, and you can get either economic or normal on there. And the normal quality setting on the QVGA is about what you would expect to see on a little video that you could record and play on your computer. I think it works pretty well. I think that basically what you get about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours on a gig media card. I have a compact flash card for QVGA. WQVGA, it's the same thing. It's primarily, again, designed, you know, specifically to be able to work with your PlayStation Portable. However, the WQVGA is a widescreen format. So there you're looking at a size of 368 by, the website will tell you 208, but it's actually 240. And it'll cut itself off on the PlayStation Portable when you do the 16:9 settings. Dan mentioned something about the audio, and he had a problem playing the audio over there because of, was that Arch or something that has that problem, Dan?
Yeah, it's not Arch, but it's the MPEG, MPlayer and VLC, the way that they've been compiled.
The packages in the repository.
I'm not sure what libraries they used or some other people had problems with too, but it plays fine under Zine.
Right. Well, the video formats, the video formatting on this device, it records it as their MPEG-4 videos recorded with DivX. At least that's what it looks like to me. The DivX MPEG-4 videos. And MPlayer is telling me that it's putting out 45 and a half frames per second. Even though the website you can look up on there, it'll tell you 30 frames per second. So 45.45 is pretty good as well. And then the audio itself, the audio layer under there is coming in a dual channel audio layer. That's FAAD, and it's AAC for MPEG 2 or 4, 24,000 hertz dual channel audio on there. And I guess that was the problem that you had with the packages, that they didn't have AAC support or something like that.
It was something to do with the FAD support on MPlayer and VLC. Okay.
Sounds like our guest has joined us.
But I'll tell you what, I really like this toy. It's neater than hell. It's the right size to take with you. Compact flash media cards, or the other alternative is the little media card that you can use with your PlayStation Portable. There's a slot for that, too. You can use that as well. This is a really neat little gadget to have with you. If you're going on a trip or something like that, and like I said before, if you were a video caster, did IPTV vlog, whatever the hell you want to call it, this would be the thing for you to have. Takes video and converts it into something that you can get rid of off of your computer or website with absolute ease. The only problem that I found with this thing, the only one, is that the particular one that I have, and I'm assuming that that's what it is right now, the particular one that I have has this deal where you can just barely hear a high-pitched whine in the background of the audio. Now, if you guys go to my video blog site, the IPTV site off of my homepage, you can download a sample of video and you can hear it. It's just a little, you know, a little high-pitched audio whine in the very the very background of the audio. I cannot get that to go away. And it's not real noticeable, right? But you can notice it. If this is not something that that would make me not want to use the product. I want to say that right now. It's not something that's that unbearable would make me want to stop using this, even if there was no fix to it. However, I looked in the forums on Neurosys site, and I had seen a few other people that mentioned this same problem. But I never saw a resolution to the problem. So I called them up, and the support over there at Neurosys, fantastic, nice bunch of guys. One of the tech people picked the phone right up when I called over there and told me they would be more than happy to send me out a replacement right away as soon as they got my information. So
that was a feature for the test model.
The feature, yeah, it might be. Now there's some other people that had it as well, but I think maybe it's an early revision kind of shielding problem. That's my personal opinion, and that maybe they're going to replace it with something that doesn't have that problem, or perhaps it's just a firmware issue or something like that. I don't think it's the cables because I flipped them around, but we'll find out probably within a week or so. I'm sure they'll ship me a new one and I can test it out and see if that wine's still there. Other than that, hey, it's $150, guys. It's really, really cool. If you're looking to do any video casting or something like that, go out and get one. Hands down, it's one of the coolest tools that you could use to do that. Like I said, if you're into doing that video casting, that would be the thing to do. If you want to be able to record stuff, DV, TV, and stuff like that while you're on the road, you have to travel a lot, get one. If you're not in real hurry, but you really like the technology, hang in there, because shortly, I believe, first quarter this year, maybe, they're thinking about releasing the version 3 of it as well, and that might be something to check out as well. So, in the interim, that's what I think. Good stuff.
Cool. Hope you write it up on your blog so we can check out the fine details.
Yay!
Sounds like our guest is on the asterisk room. Matt, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the show. We've got Matt Mullen.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. We've got Matt Mullenweg, who's the original developer.
It's incredibly sort of broken up on this.
Is this better? Can you hear me?
Hey guys, I'm going to bounce off here, and that way we can get some extra bandwidth for the guest.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan.
All right.
Yep.
I'll see you in a little bit. I'll listen on the stream.
Good.
Matt, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And you're the creator of WordPress, which is a fantastic piece of software. I use it personally, and I think it's great.
Are you hearing Pat, or did he break up for you?
Hello.
Our bandwidth is getting eaten up tonight.
Oh, jeez.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm going to cry.
Yeah, I'm going to pull off and let you guys talk real quick, save some bandwidth. I'll join you back up in a few minutes.
Thanks, Link.
Yeah, all right.
Matt, can you hear us now?
I can hear much, much better.
Okay. All right. We got rid of that.
The dead weight is gone. Those are the two other guys from the show.
Sorry about that.
It's not your fault. It's their fault.
It's Link and Alan. They if they were here tonight like they normally are, they wouldn't have been on the Asterix room. See, we run the show pretty much on a very basic budget, out of our own pockets pretty much. So we really push the limits of what we can do.
When we make that first million and can afford a T1 line, then we'll be golden.
I actually just, I live just a couple blocks away from the data center, so they offer, in my building, they offer 10 MIPS internet for $30 a month.
Wow, that's awesome.
You're lucky.
You're out on the West Coast.
It's very, very nice.
You're on the West Coast, right? San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco's a very wired city. It's very techy.
Yeah, especially this sort of couple of blocks. There's two major data centers just within spitting distance.
Well, I guess we should get on with the interview. You're the creator of WordPress, man. A great piece of software. I use it personally for my own blogging, and I love it. I think it's great. I run it on my own dedicated server, but a lot of people I know who use WordPress use it on, you know, different providers, and everyone who I talk to loves WordPress. It's real simple and easy. And
thank you very much.
Now, I guess you started the whole thing yourself, right?
Well, there was a project before WordPress called B2 Cafe Log, and it's what I was using before, and it was an open source blogging software similar to WordPress, and at one point it was abandoned. So in the true open source sense, it was picked up, and that became WordPress.
So what did you do exactly to improve it?
What did we do to improve it?
Yeah.
Well, the main focus from the beginning was sort of on the usability side of things. So before, to edit anything, for example, to change the title of your blog or to do a lot of different things, you'd have to go into a configuration file and edit, you know, 20 different things. And people would always mess up the syntax and get errors in their blog. We made it standards compliant in terms of, you know, web standards. We added support. There was support for pingbacks and trackbacks and everything. And started to add in some comment spam protection, because that was just starting to sort of become prominent on the web.
So I guess what you guys
did... There was a lot of sort of marketing aspects around it, too, where it was sort of framed a lot differently. It had a new name. B2 Cafe Log always had two names, so no one was ever sure what to call it. And a lot of things like that.
I guess what you guys have done is you've taken, you know, the complicated CSS code and everything. You've you know, tied it all together so that it's a simple interface that anybody could use.
Yeah, we focused a lot on the usability.
Now, it seems the project has grown pretty big because everybody talks about WordPress these days. How many developers besides yourself are working on it?
Well, there's one other lead developer. His name is Ryan Boyne. And sort of inner core, I'd say there's about a dozen people who regularly submit patches and, you know, participate in development. And then beyond that, we have a plugin system. And, of course, a theme system, which have hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, creating themes or in plugins for their own use and also for public consumption. At the core of it, it's really just two people, which is kind of cool.
Well, I have to ask you, are you guys making any money off of this, or is this just a purely community project?
Well, WordPress.org is a community project. There's also a company called Automatic, and we have a couple sort of related products where we have something called Akismet, which is a distributed anti-comment spam service, similar in concept to something like Razor for email, except it's specifically for web spam. So comment, trackback, pingback, spam. And that's free for 99% of use, but there are enterprise licenses and pro licenses that people buy. Most recently, Yahoo licensed Akismet for all of their hosting customers. We also have WordPress.com, which is a hosted version of WordPress. So it's like WordPress, the software you download, you upload it to your server, much like you have. WordPress.com, you just sign up. Just takes a few seconds, and you have a blog instantly.
And how much space do they allow on that?
What was that?
On WordPress.com, how much space are users allowed?
And the idea is basically to open up WordPress to a much wider audience, because even the barrier of having, you know, MySQL database or having to run PHP is too high for a lot of people.
Now, how much space do you limit their... their amount of information they could post, amount of space they could take up?
No.
So it's unlimited?
Oh, it's not unlimited, but everything's finite. We have about, I think the number, latest number is around 72,000 blogs that have been created on the service.
Wow, that's a lot.
Got started a couple months ago.
That's pretty awesome that you let people go on there and sign up and just blog away.
What was that?
That's fantastic. They allow people, anybody, to come in and just, you know, start a blog.
Yeah. And there have certainly been some interesting ones.
So let me ask you, how did you get started with programming and web development?
I guess I got started programming because I had to. I don't really consider myself a programmer. I was actually, several years ago, my sort of goal was to be a jazz musician. And I went to a performing arts high school in Houston, and pretty much all my time was spent on the saxophone. And what I did was I knew a bit about the web. My dad's always been in computers. I've always enjoyed computers a lot. But there were a number of jazz musicians in town who I exchanged building a website for them in exchange for jazz lessons. So that was sort of how I got started on building websites. And they were all awful, utterly terrible. I'd use FrontPage and Dreamweaver and everything. Okay. And eventually I started running into the limitations of all that and wanting to do more. And I think the first thing I probably ever programmed was, you know, just a basic web counter that someone wanted on their page. And from there, just been sort of picking things up as I go along.
What do you use primarily for your workstation? Are you a Mac guy, a Linux guy? Windows guy?
What I use primarily to write in?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
What's your what OS do you run on your workstation? Like, what do you do your development on?
Oh, I switch mostly between. I have, well, I'm sitting in front of it right now. I have a Ubuntu box and a XP box, a Windows XP box. I switch between them pretty transparently. I have a real cool program set up called Synergy, and it lets you share a mouse and keyboard between multiple computers on Mac, Windows, and Linux. I actually switch computers a bunch. I was running a Mac laptop as my primary machine for a long time, and then it just got too slow and too heavy, and I got a little Vio that I'm running now. Most of my work is done either in PuTTY or on the terminal if I'm on Ubuntu, and I use various FTP and text editors.
So are you, what's your text editor of choice? Here we go.
It depends on where I am. If I'm on the Mac, I really enjoy TextMate is my favorite. If I'm on Linux or on a terminal, I generally use Nano or sometimes Vim if I have to. And on Windows, I'll use either UltraEdit or actually Dreamweaver 8 because it has really, really nice secure FTP integration. So I can open files up directly on the server and edit them. And it's smart about tabs and Unicode and new lines and all that sort of good stuff.
All right.
I tried text editors almost weekly. Like, I just tried the Zend editor by the guys who did PHP last night. And ultimately, because I'm very usability focused, they all frustrate me horribly, and I end up going back to something I'm familiar with.
Okay. WordPress 2 was recently released.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of good things about WordPress, and up until yesterday, I've really never used it. I know one of the sites that we're affiliated with uses WordPress pretty heavily, and I've added some posts onto there, and it's been pretty easy. But yesterday, I was in a meeting at work, and they were talking about, you know, I work at a school district, and they're talking about, putting together a little web page and a podcast that these two students want to do, and interviewing, you know, mm-hmm. local bands and stuff. And they wanted an easy way to be able to do that and distribute their podcasts and upload the files and stuff. And the first thing that came to mind was, you know, let's check out WordPress. And the install for WordPress, when I came home and actually did it remotely from my house to my server at work, It took all of, what, 5 minutes? It was so easy. I mean, you guys,
you.
Two thumbs up for that. And it looks really good. Now, I do have a question for you, because the documentation and some of the other places I was looking around really seem to focus on the older version of WordPress right now, 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out how to add the file so that would appear in the RSS feed as an enclosure. And it's really simple in WordPress 2. It does a really good job of it once I figured out how to do it. But I noticed that when you're writing, there's a little thing over here to upload a file when you're posting.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to figure out exactly what that does, because I uploaded a file, and what does that do then?
So it might be a little... So basically, to do enclosures for a podcast, all you need to do is link to the MP3 file.
Right.
And WordPress will automatically grab it and make it an enclosure. The new upload functionality is basically something we improved at before. If you were writing a post and you decide you want to upload the file, you'd have to, you know, click to another screen, upload the file, copy and paste to HTML. It took a bunch of steps. We've added a new uploader, which is right now in this iteration primarily focused on media, like images. So if you tried to upload like a Word document or something like that, it might not work as well yet. But the idea is that if you upload an image, what it'll do is it'll automatically create a thumbnail, and you can drag and drop that into your WYSIWYG editor and then resize it as needed or, you know, format it within the post.
Ah, see, I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I can upload some media to that, like an AUG file or an MP3, and that might make an enclosure for it. But that's not what that's for, is it?
So you can upload media through it, but it won't automatically make an enclosure, I don't believe.
Okay.
There is a new feature we added, which if you want to really dive into code, you could play with, where actually what's happening on the back end is all the media that's being attached to a post is in the database a subpost. So it's technically it can have comments of its own. It can have, you know, its own metadata attached to it, and it can even create its own templates. So for example, if you were to create an AUG template, you could have it show it shows up. That subpage shows up with like a little flash player or something like that, so people could listen to it inline. But that right now, that would be a little tricky. You'd have to really dive into the template code.
Okay, it's just man, to add a podcast to those, you're right though. It was so easy. You just need to provide that URL right there, and it's good to go.
Well, we try to keep. Ideally, you shouldn't think about it. About WordPress when you're using WordPress. You should just think about whatever you're writing, whatever the content is, whatever you're trying to do.
I have to upgrade to 2.0. I'm currently at 1.5 myself.
Now,
what was your blog again? I saw a blog link from the site, but it was it looked like it wasn't being used anymore.
That must be Alan's blog.
It's probably the original. what you're talking about, I think, is the on off the main site blog. Dan hasn't posted to that in months.
I think it was run by B-Blog.
Yeah, that's Dan's.
That was a tech show blog that we just haven't posted to.
Get rid of that link, nothing out there.
Yeah, been a long time. Back when we tried to plan things out a little better. But Pat's blog is running WordPress.
Yeah, 1.5 I'm running. And it runs pretty cool. Well. I don't go crazy. I know some people go crazy with the templates and changing the look and everything. I don't care about that. I just like posting stuff every once in a while, you know, once or twice a week, you know, some techie stuff, some new stuff, and leave it at that, you know? But WordPress is so great that you can customize it to no end.
Thank you. We try to keep it very flexible, and I'm continually surprised by what people do with it.
Because people come up with their own templates pretty easily, right? And they post them, and you can download them.
And also, you know, people are doing a lot of enterprise-type integration. If you go to cnet.com and you click on how-to, I think all the links to the courses on that site are actually going to a WordPress blog, which is styled to look exactly like the rest of cnet.com.
That's cool. Now, you were working for CNET, weren't you?
I was for about a year. So they obviously, you know, they had a little help there.
See, that's a good site.
Yeah, I actually really, really enjoyed working there. If I hadn't been leaving to sort of start my own company, it was a fantastic place to work.
Now you're on.
It's also about a block and a half away from where I live, so that was convenient.
That's real convenient. You started your own company. Are you doing WordPress support, or are you doing something else?
Yeah, it's the company I mentioned earlier, Automatic. You can see us at automatic.com. It's AUTOMATTIC. So it's got a little pun in there too. Basically, the idea is to provide sort of products and services that people have been asking for around WordPress and related things.
So you're really making a go out of this is the business with WordPress and has that's really taken off. Did you expect it to take off?
No, not at all. especially when it got started. When WordPress, like the very first version of WordPress, we couldn't get anyone to use it. And so I had to set up blogs for all my friends just to get, you know, the first 5 users. So it was definitely an uphill battle for a while, but after, I think it reached a tipping point, maybe right around the 1.5 release, where it's got so much momentum now that it's almost crazy. It's hard to believe.
Do you have any idea what the user base is?
It's hard to say. We do track downloads. 1.5, right before release 1.2, it had something like 900,000 downloads. 2.0 has had about 130,000 downloads so far. User base, I put in a couple hundred thousand, but we're trying to grow that a lot with the WordPress.com since it's a lot easier to get started with.
Yeah, a lot of web hosting companies offer WordPress. I know somebody I work with was looking to do their own site for their, you know, their second mm-hmm. business, and their the host had WordPress and got them up and running in like minutes, literally. Real easy, you know.
Yeah, because we're, you know, GPL and open source, it's completely free to bundle, and so a lot of control panel software like Fantastico and Plesk has modules where they can just install WordPress with a click or two. There's also been some different partnerships where, like Bluehost or Yahoo Web Hosting, will install WordPress and actually keep it upgraded, so they'll upgrade your blog for you, which is very nice because that's one of the biggest hassles we deal with is helping people and getting people to upgrade to the latest version.
I would also think one of the biggest hassles you probably have to deal with is the ever-present comment spam that a lot of blogs suffer from. And what have you guys done on WordPress to alleviate the stress of comment spam?
I see comment spam mostly as a solved problem, actually. There were a bunch of WordPress plugins, some of which I wrote myself, that do a really good job of blocking 99% of spam. Whether they use some sort of, you know, challenge response, a CAPTCHA, some sort of hashcast system. There's quite a few. The problem was that these would always work for a couple of months and then stop working because the spammers would adapt or they'd read the code or they'd adapt to it. So that's why we ended up doing a Kismet, and it's actually bundled with WordPress 2.0. It's basically it's a learning system. So as people, there's, I think, around 80 or 90,000 blogs using it right now. And as soon as spam hits one of them and they report it, it, you know, intelligently waits that and learns that and protects the entire network. So some spam get through every day, but the majority of the people using it never, ever see any spam.
That's good, because I know, although I've been using Bblog for about a year and a half now, whew, they're still trying to work out that comment spam issue. It is a nightmare. It can be.
I think that was the blog I looked at. I thought I saw it had 90 comments or something, and I was like, wow, that's quite a bit. But they were all spam.
Yeah, I do.
Kismet is actually an open API, so it's been adapted to a lot of different systems. There's, you know, a Python library that uses it. There's a Java library. It's written, there's plugins for Bloxham and MovableType and WordPress and Nucleus. So the idea was to create something, you know, basically a web service that anyone could call into. I've even seen some talk of people using it for wiki software and things like that.
Yeah, it's very, very, very versatile. Very versatile.
Now, I use it with MySQL. Can you use it with other databases that are more scalable?
Could you repeat that?
I have a very basic setup. You know, I just put it on a spare box, you know, for my blog.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it can handle, you know, other databases, you know, that are more scalable, more enterprise size databases besides MySQL?
Yeah, we only support MySQL right now. And there's really not a whole lot of demand to support other databases. If we were going to, the next one I would want to support would be Postgres, because I like Postgres a lot, and maybe SQLite, simply because it's really, really easy to work with. But there's been zero interest for Oracle or MS SQL Server or anything like that. And MySQL is so widely supported that it's everywhere. It's very ubiquitous. You know, the reason that WordPress, I think one of the reasons it's been successful is that just our platform choices, which were pure luck, and that was PHP and MySQL, which have taken off in the past 2 years, and WordPress has sort of gone along for the ride.
Now, it's all pretty much PHP, right?
Yeah, everything's PHP.
So now with, obviously it's compliant with PHP 5, now you got the new version of MySQL was, I think, just released. Was it 5?
Yeah, and version 5.
Does that work well with version 5 too? You guys have that?
It does, but version 5 introduced something called a strict mode, which I'm not sure if it's on by default or not, but when strict mode is activated, some of our SQL statements don't go through, because it'll enforce something like you can't have a date, which is zero, which is something we use in different places, or just sort of syntactical things like that have worked since we started, but they don't work in MySQL 5 and stretch mode. I think we may have cleaned all those up, and it'll be in the next release, but 2.0, you might need to turn stretch mode off to use it.
All right.
I'm not sure exactly what benefit stretch mode brings.
Now, are you working on any other projects besides WordPress?
A couple. I'm involved with, just recently, as in it got started yesterday, a wiki-like translation manager. So the idea that, you know, it's really wide and open source, that people want to localize the software. And WordPress itself is localized into 26, 27 different languages. But it's really hard to do so. And you basically need to pick one person to do it all and to manage all the translation and to manage, either do the work or manage all the people doing the work. And you sort of have a single point of failure there where if that person disappears, you're kind of SOL. So yesterday I was actually at a MASH, it's called MASH Pit. It was basically where a bunch of geeks got together to build something. I ended up working with Cal Henderson, who was the architect behind Flickr, and Alex Russell, who works for a company called Jot and does a framework called Dojo. And we got started on, it doesn't have a name yet, it's so new, but it's basically a wiki-like translation manager. So people can submit translations for different strings and then manage them, and you can approve or revert different submissions. Because previous systems have had problems with both the people inserting spam in the translation and also with, you know, inserting bad words or something. And it's hard to know when they do that if you don't speak the language. There's forum software that runs with the same user system and everything as WordPress called BBPress, which is what we use for the forums on WordPress.org. I'm involved with a ping distribution service called Ping-O-Matic, which is basically when you update your blog, it sends a single ping to Ping-O-Matic, and Ping-O-Matic then notifies Technority and Google Blog Search and Yahoo and all these dozens of services that want that information to know that you've updated. And I think it does 6 or 7 million pings per day. I think that's the main things. I do some work. I help out with a web standards project when I can and some things like that.
Now, is that the web standards project for WordPress, or is that the web standards project? Of the W3C.
The web standards project.
Oh, so you work with the W3C?
No. It's called WASP.
Oh.
Web standards project.
How'd you get hooked up with that?
I do. There's some crossover there. Some W3C people are on it, but it's more of an advocacy organization rather than a standards organization.
Okay.
So only standards I've really been involved with, well, two. I worked with David Galbraith on something called RSS Pink, which is expanding sort of the ping infrastructure to include richer metadata, much like RSS feeds, and with Tontek Chalik and Eric Meyer on basically what was the first microformat. I don't know if you guys are familiar with microformats, but there's one called XFN, which is sort of the first adaptation of embedding rich semantics into HTML, regular HTML code.
Okay. And I guess that has really made its way into WordPress, because I see right off the bat the page validates as XHTML.
Yep.
And you guys did a really good... That's another thing that I really liked about it, was that it's pretty... It is standards compliant.
That's always been very important to us. And you know, there's a lot of different standards, so sometimes it's tough to support them all, but we do our best.
Now, you might be surprised about this, but for some reason, and I was surprised, a lot of companies don't seem to be too concerned about standards compliance, and a lot of developers. And I think that's a shame.
Well, there certainly are situations where maybe the cost, if the people doing the work don't know standards, maybe the cost of them learning it is higher than what the company can afford in terms of time or money. That might be a valid reason. But it might also be pragmatic. I mean, I must admit that a little bit of my support of standards is, you know, a philosophical thing, that I believe they're important to the basis of the web and to a growing web. And if the normal economic arguments, like it's faster, it's, you know, cheaper in the long run, might be smaller, don't apply in a particular situation, they might not be swayed by the more philosophical arguments for standards, or open source for that matter. We actually use proprietary software in some of our web serving stuff. We found Apache wasn't performing up to snuff, and we ended up going with a proprietary web server called Lightspeed.
And how has that worked out for you guys?
Oh, it's worked out very, very, very well. But it was with a lot of hesitation on my part, simply because, we're basically an open source company, and we're an open source set of folks. And so given the choice between two equal, you know, proprietary and open source solution, I don't really look at cost as much as I usually go with open source every time. But sometimes it's an uphill battle. For example, I try usually about once a year to use Linux as my primary desktop, and I've tried GNOME and KDE, and it's always a little bit too frustrating for me to stick with it.
What's killing you? Like, what? Because I've been using Linux for about 3 years now straight as my personal desktop, and you know, we talk back and forth about what is deficient in the Linux desktop for, you know, most people.
Are we still connected?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Hello?
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 Did I just knock something?
I don't know. Did you knock out your cable, Dan?
Oh, I did. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Oh, you just dropped off.
I think, you know, I must have bumped this and it pulled out a little bit.
I don't know. I heard you. That was pretty odd. Maybe his connection dropped out.
Well, I know he just dropped out, and hopefully he's going to come back
in. Yeah, he'll probably come back.
I hope so.
It's good stuff, man. I like WordPress. I really got to upgrade, man, because the new features look really good. Got to take some time out one weekend, middle of a blizzard, and do it.
Now, I've never done the upgrade. I just did my first install yesterday, and it was...
Would you install 2.0?
Yeah, right off the bat.
Yeah, I have 1.5, so I got to do the upgrade. I'm looking at the instructions, and it doesn't seem overly complicated. You know, obviously, you got to, you know, back up your database. That's rule number one. But
I hope he's coming back.
I hope so, too.
Dun, dun, dun.
So he noticed your the B blog.
Yeah,
you really should get rid of that link, Dan. If we're not gonna maintain
it, just dump the blog.
Dump it, man.
Move it over to WordPress.
Go for it, man.
Do you want to shoot him an email?
Yeah, I'll email him. That's gonna jump back on.
Tell him that I think my hello. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I moved my microphone, and I think it got disconnected, and that's why you couldn't hear me, and I apologize for that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I assume that the connection went down. I dialed back.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. What was I just about to ask him? Oh, you were talking about that you had difficulty moving to Linux as your main desktop.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, what have you found problematic? What, in your opinion, has been a problem?
It's always been hardware issues. So, for example, my scanner doesn't work, or my photo printer, I can't get to work correctly, or some sort of weird audio conflict, or weird wireless hardware that isn't supported. That's always been sort of the main barrier. And a lot of times, it might be something... I might just have the wrong hardware that's just not supported yet because it's not widely enough used. Or it might be something that is fixable, but I'd have to spend a whole lot of time fixing it, and I just don't always have that sort of time.
I hear you there.
Yeah, hardware support's a big issue.
But I give it a go pretty much once a year because, you know, I believe in it. And so I'm looking forward to the day when, you know, it's sort of... Because it gets better every time. So I know that eventually I'll... try it and it'll just work, and that's when I'll switch.
So what were the latest distros you were trying? You said you were trying Ubuntu?
I've tried Ubuntu. I like it a lot. On our servers, we use either Ubuntu or Debian, and I've also tried Fedora Core. I think the last one I tried was Fedora Core 2, and I have a Gentoo box just running, just hooked up to some hard drives running Samba and stuff.
Now, when you say using Linux as your regular desktop, it sounds to me like you're running it on a daily basis, though, right?
I am. So yeah. The monitor on my right is actually running Ubuntu, and it's on all the time. But I use it. I don't use it as my primary machine, simply because I'm just not as productive on it.
Right. Okay.
I run sort of some web browsers and, you know, XChat and some different things on it.
What you need to experience is the wonderful world of video editing on the Linux side. That's a treat. Although it's come a long way.
What was that?
I said you need to experience the wonderful world of video editing on the Linux side. It's come a long way, but...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Is it tough?
It can be. It's come a long way. I mean, there's been some really great applications, like Kino, but... Up until about a year and a half ago, if you didn't have a digital camera recorder, whoo, it was horrible.
Wow.
But, yeah.
But, like you said, it's come a long way, and it's going to continue to do that. So I'm a strong believer that it might be a year from now, it might be 5 years from now, but, you know, Linux will match and be just as usable and just as successful as the other platforms like Mac and Windows.
Yeah. One of the things that I keep looking at and concerns me big time is all the, you know, the multimedia support, which legally is just not, you know, in Linux. I mean, it's there and you can do it, like playback of QuickTime and Windows Media Format. Wow. And even just playing a DVD is really not legal under Linux right now. Under most distributions.
And it's not going to get any better with all the DRM they're building in the Windows Vista and such.
That's what it looks like, although there's been people that have said, you know, in another year, none of that's going to matter anymore. But I kept my fingers crossed.
Really?
Yeah. Stephen Vaughn Nichols was saying that he honestly believes in less than a year, all this stuff we won't be worried about anymore. Now, I'd like to believe his vision. I really would. I don't see it, but I would like to, you know, that's what I would like to see. But who knows? Who knows? Now you.
Yeah, the trend is definitely not good.
The sad part, Matt, is that most people don't give a shit.
You're right; they don't. It's Pat had said the sad thing is most people don't care. Don't really care about those issues.
Yeah, well, I think the DRM is getting more and more restrictive, though, as more people are doing multimedia. It's supposed to do things like iTunes and some of the restrictions that iTunes is placing. They'll start to bump into it more and more. Like, they have these new TVs that can only get a full quality signal from trusted hardware or a special type of cable or things like that, things that don't let you record. And so as I think of the multimedia industry pushes more and more, I hope that they'll start to get more pushback.
You know, I hope so too, but I don't know. Did you watch Microsoft's Bill Gates' keynote speech at CES this year?
I read bits of it.
They had an interesting vision for the future.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was an interesting vision of the future. I just don't see Microsoft's products taking it there. But you could actually see, I mean, everything. Of course, it was a Microsoft's keynote speech. They were speaking specifically about, you know, using their products with all these services. And I can see that, you know, all these services coming out, you're going to have support for the Microsoft products. Or, you know, on a more limited scale, you're going to have support for the Apple products. But, yeah, all the stuff in between, I just don't, you know, it's going to be really difficult. Which is unfortunate.
Dan, confess.
Well, on the bright side, more and more applications are moving to the web.
Right.
The real reason why Dan watched the keynote was he wanted to see Justin Timberlake.
So you have things like Writely, which is a great word processor.
And I keep hearing rumors that somebody's porting OpenOffice over to the web. Although nobody can confirm that, but I keep hearing that every now and then. Originally, I heard that it was Novell who was going to incorporate it into their virtual office products, but maybe Google will do it one day.
They certainly, you know, Gmail is a great, great email program, and you know, it's for many people I've seen who use it regularly, it's faster than Thunderbird or Outlook would be. So, yeah, I think that's a sign of things to come. Especially, you know, broadband is getting better and better. Obviously not on this asterisk connection, but the trend there is good as well.
Right. So you have dropped your regular, you know, your old day job, and you've, you know, gone into business straight with WordPress. And being an open source company, has there been a lot of hurdles in doing that?
You lose him again?
Oh, are you still there? Dude, what?
I'm still here, but I lost you after you said hurdles.
Oh, have there been a lot of hurdles that you've had to gone through with being an open source company as compared to maybe a closed source company? Have you? I mean, there's a lot of buzz these days about people just taking the open source and using it for their advantage and not contributing back to the community. Have you had problems with WordPress and that happening with other companies?
Sure, there have definitely been people who have used WordPress in ways they wouldn't agree with. But for our company, there haven't really been issues because we're not seeking to relicense anything in WordPress. It's all staying GPL. And certainly I've learned over the past couple of years that the more you give away, the more you get. So sort of our philosophy is just give everything away, you know, open source it all. And the business will come not from software licenses, but from services and things like that.
And obviously it's been very fruitful for you.
It's gone very well, yeah.
And that's important. That's great.
Maybe there's an element of karma or something. You just, you know, do the best you can for the world, and hopefully you're rewarded.
So then how many people do you have working at your company?
Right now we have four. It's myself, a fellow over in Austin, a guy in Ireland named Donica, and a guy up in Petaluma, which is north of San Francisco, called Orion Bourne. These are all sort of just key people from the WordPress community who, once I got this thing started, I said, wow, they would be the best person in the world to work with.
Now, do you actually have, like, company offices, or is it basically you run this out of your house and it's a kind of a virtual office that you run?
It's all a virtual office at this point. Because it'd be kind of silly to have an office when we don't really have more than one person in one place.
Right.
But we are bringing on another guy in San Francisco. It was actually just announced. We're bringing in a CEO named Tony Schneider from Yahoo, leaving Yahoo. And so, you know, he's going to be in San Francisco, and Ryan is going to be pretty close to San Francisco. So that might be the threshold for, you know, starting to look at office space.
Wow, that's
great.
But
I like being virtual a lot because, you know, I have a very comfortable home setup. So, and so do the other guys.
Matt, some of the people on the IRC channel are asking you, what advice can you give to people trying to start their own open source business?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say look at what open source is weak at. And it does have weaknesses. It has things like it's difficult to get support. Maybe people want to build using the program, but, you know, they don't have the expertise to, so there might be training opportunities. Or there might be, like, WordPress.com, a hosted service. So if it's something that you download and install, can you make it easier for more people to use? So I think it's just really sort of identifying the key gaps and addressing that. The reason Akismet really got started was I couldn't think of a way to really address the spam problem in a completely distributed manner. So we decided to do a centralized service, and then I looked at the economics of running that and said, okay, this is, you know, what we have to charge to keep it running for this percentage of people. And so that's what I'd recommend. Don't forget the cost of anything. I mean, everything has very real cost, so if it's possible, you know, sit down with a spreadsheet, map out what it's going to cost this month, next month, a year from now, and then, you know, set goals for yourself. Say where you want to be in 3 months, in 6 months. And if you make them, that's great. If you don't make them, figure out why and change. I don't think any business does today what they set out to do, you know, several years ago. You kind of have to be, the most important thing, I think, is being agile and adapting to what the market is telling you that it wants.
Cool. So now, do you have any, when you're not coding, when you're not working on WordPress, what do you like to do?
Besides jazz.
Yeah, but, speaking of jazz, I mean, do you still play?
I still do. I play, well, I grew up playing saxophone, and so recently I started to pick up piano. I've always loved the piano, so I'm starting to learn it. I'm very bad at it, but, you know, I'm getting there. And photography is really the other main thing I do. I really, really enjoy taking pictures of people, places, and things. My blog, photomat.net, has, I think, 11,000 some odd photos on it. Some of them, you know, artsy, and some of them, you know, just taken off the cuff just for fun.
Was that Photomat, M-A-T, .net?
P-H-O-T-O. MATT.net.
Ah, okay.
What do you use to manage so many pictures?
What do I use to manage them? So I have sort of, well, on the desktop side, I use Photoshop to work with most of them. And then I have sort of a complex folder and file naming system where I organize them based on dates. And then on the website, I use some software, some open source software called Gallery, and it's a PHP software that is good at managing lots and lots of photos. Eventually, I hope to move that into WordPress, but for now, Gallery works, and if it's not broken, I don't want to mess with it too much.
So now, do you have a jazz band that you play with or an ensemble?
The bulk of those. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You finish what you were saying.
I was just going to say the bulk of those pictures were taken with, you know, cheap $200 or $300 Sony or Casio cameras. And just more recently, I ended up getting a real SLR, a Rebel XT, which has been a lot of fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at some of the pictures now. Do you play in a jazz band or ensemble or anything like that, or is it just on the side for fun?
Not really since I moved to San Francisco, unfortunately. In Houston, I played a lot, a couple times a week usually, but after I moved out here, I was so busy with working for CNET, and there's also such a great tech community here that almost every night of the week there's some sort of geek event or something. In fact, tonight, after I get off this, I'm probably going to go, they're having a death of the PowerBook, a funeral for the PowerBook, because, you know, the PowerBook was introduced in 91 number. It's been replaced by the MacBook, so a bunch of people are going to a bar and having a wake. And there's something like that almost every night, sort of just a really geeky event where you can connect with, you know, like-minded tech people. So since moving, I haven't really been as involved with music.
How was the jazz scene in Houston?
It's fantastic. I would say it's, you know, one of the top three or four in the States. It's, you wouldn't expect it, but there's just, well, a lot of well-known jazz musicians are from Houston. You know, like old guys like Illinois Jacquet and also newer people like Jason Moran and some people like that, Robert Glasper. And it has a performing arts high school, the high school I went to, which sort of feeds this huge community of jazz musicians in town. And Houston also has a great appreciation for the arts, which I don't think a lot of people know about. There's fantastic museums and a lot of places for musicians to play just around town. So it's a good economy.
Yeah, and you play the sax, don't you?
No, I play the trombone. Played. I haven't played in a while.
A lot of practice?
Yeah. My lips are dead.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah. If you don't play for a couple of years, like 10 years, and you try and play it, you play for like a half an hour, and it is like, oh, like you got hit in the face with a softball.
Yeah. I'm in sort of a maintenance mode with the saxophone right now, where I just play a couple hours a week, just like the bare minimum to not lose it.
So did you ever record your stuff and put it on the web?
Do I have any recordings online?
Yeah, do you have any?
I do. The last recording is probably about 2 or 3 years old now. It was from my senior recital that I did when I graduated. Let me make sure the site is up before I send you there. Yeah, if you go to seniorrecital.com and you click on Matt Mullenweg, there is, you know, you can download or stream MP3s of my senior recital. And the fun part about that is I did an arrangement of the Mario Brothers music, Super Mario World music, the original, for four saxophones. So there's a quartet of saxophones and a drummer doing, you know, we start with the intro, and then we go underground and then go to underwater, and finally you get the star and you win and stuff. So that was a lot of fun. And the rest is just pretty traditional jazz.
Which file is that off of that website? Do you remember?
Oh, so if you look at, so one of the jokes is that when I was in high school, I was forced to do a lot of classical stuff, which I didn't like very much because classical saxophone isn't that great. So for the arrangement I did of the jazz arrangement of Super Mario Bros., I gave it all Italian names so it would sound classical. So if you look at number 4 through 7, it starts with Nel Enzio, Sotterraneo, Nel Acqua. Those are just Italian words for underwater and beginning and stuff like that.
I'll have to check those out.
We're all a bunch of musical geeks around here.
But it's been a while since I've recorded anything, which is probably a good thing.
You got to get cracking on that piano.
Yeah. Well, it takes years. There's no shortcuts in music.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, there are if you have somebody else play it for you.
It's like, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice.
So we're, anything else you'd like to talk about tonight, Matt? Or any upcoming news that we should know about with WordPress? Or any of your other projects?
Well, we're coming out with a new release in a couple of days. Just sort of a bug fix. But other than that, it's sort of smooth sailing. It's a little bit of a quiet period because all the big announcements were the last month or two. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on the show.
Thank you for coming on. Sorry about some of the bandwidth issues. And some of the issues we had there, but it happens every so often. We really appreciate it. You're doing a fantastic job with WordPress, and I want to thank you again.
It was good talking.
Great interview.
Have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, Matt.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Matt Mullenweg. Great software, man. WordPress. I love it. I'm going to be upgrading pretty soon.
If you love it, why don't you marry it?
Good stuff.
It's a piece of software, man. Relax, Dan.
No, it is. It's really, really good. It is really good stuff.
So what's... Dan, you said you set up WordPress today somewhere?
Dan? Yes.
Dan's playing some jazz music. I guess that's... Is that Matt's voice?
Yeah, there it is.
Almost like a cha-cha-cha.
Yeah.
That's good, Dan.
Okay. That sounds pretty cool. I have to grab the other.
Yeah, that sounds...
Is WordPress going to replace your B-blog software you're currently using?
No, I did that for work.
Just playing?
No, I did that for work. Okay. We're experimenting with, I said there was a class, or just two people that want to do a podcast and how we can make that easier and facilitate it so that they can, you know, upload their files and have the RSS feed generated for them and everything. And, you know, first thing that came to mind to be able to do that was WordPress. And I just, you know, installed it and started playing around with it yesterday. And like I said, you know, it's one of those typical installs where you just read enough to get it installed and then start playing around with it until you figure out how to use it. And it's very, very, very simple.
I barely scratched the surface with the one on my machine, man.
Yeah, there's so much you can do with it.
You can go crazy.
The templating system
is
really
good.
See,
I don't give a shit about all that stuff. I just want, you know, something quick and easy that I can set up and type away, you know? But with WordPress, you can do that if you don't want to get...
Something I can use once a month.
Hey, that would be perfect for you, Alan. Or Dan's wife every other month.
Yeah, we got to get Alan a website because Alan's been sitting on that bandwidth over at his house and he doesn't do anything with it, man.
Well, that is one of my things that I have a list of things I'd like to do soon. And that is one of them on it, is fix up this...
Yeah, but just
fix up one of my computers
soon, sometime
here.
Before, like, next year, or soon, sometime before, like, you know, 2060.
Oh, before 2060, of course. No, sometime within, like, the next couple of months. I've got to clean up here. I went in here over the weekend, and this room has just become one gigantic shithole again. So it's time to, like, clear everything, that, like, all the junk out of here.
That's pretty ambitious, Alan. It never seems to work out for me, though.
Yeah,
we know, Dan.
My room, yes.
Dan's room is pretty much looks like a bomb hit it.
My room is not quite as bad as that.
It's pretty
disgusting.
I started cleaning it up on Monday again, and I just said, oh, to hell with it. I got other things to do.
God help anyone who would have to sleep on this floor.
The floor's pretty clean. It might look... You know what? The rug is so old. And I scrubbed the dog shit out of it and dog piss.
That's
full
a plus.
Of dog shit, yeah.
Yeah. So the rug is really old. Actually, we'd like to rip out all the rugs up here, but you know, with the kids being the age that they are,
yeah,
they just
you want to wait.
The heck out
just
of
just wait a few years, man.
I mean, we painted the walls, and then like what a week later,
you got handprints going across.
Yeah, I was like, what? I had the daughter writing on lipstick. I have pictures of her. I made her wash the wall.
You got crayons.
Yeah,
and stuff.
And it's like, you know.
Why bother, you know?
Yeah. But, hey,
Gotta get those magic erasers from Mr. Clean.
I'll tell you.
Mr.
No, you know what? That's a crock of crap right there. That doesn't work either.
What?
Those magic eraser things.
Yeah.
They take the paint off. That's what they do.
Yep.
A Brillo pad will take it off. Permanent marker on your TV screen?
You
scratch
go.
It off with a Brillo pad. You can't watch TV then, but... Marker God. I caught my daughter doing that when she was really young, drawing pictures on the TV screen with a permanent marker. Luckily, I got in time to wash it off.
I got a good story. My dad, I have a whiteboard in my kitchen. My dad came home one day with my mom, watched my son, and he accidentally wrote on my whiteboard with a permanent marker. Oh, man. So I was playing with VMware this week. Pretty cool stuff, man. I was checking out VMware Workstation, which is the full-blown deal where you can install multiple OSs and create images. I tried running FreeBSD. I had Ubuntu running. I had Windows XP running, and they were running pretty damn fast. One thing I did notice, though, man, it is a real memory hog. Like on my laptop, which has 256 meg, it takes forever to start up, but once it gets going, it's pretty good. But on my main workstation, I have 512 meg, and it runs really quick with 512 meg. So I'm planning on upgrading my memory in my laptop to a gig at some point, and I'm sure that'll smoke.
So it was slow, you said?
Yeah, with 256 meg, it was a little sluggish, but 512, it was.
And that's with Windows XP running under Arch?
Yeah. It was smoking fast. I was surprised how quick it was. And it's pretty nice. It's a little on the pricey side. The workstation, it's $199, but I know they offer a discount if you're a Lug member.
Right.
There's a website. I'll dig it out and I'll post it on the forum where you can get it for $100 if you want. I mean, it's great for like software developers or people that need to do cross platform integration and testing, that kind of thing. Like it's a real benefit. You can have all these different operating systems fire up and test the new software and everything.
But didn't you just do that trial version and then create the image?
Well, yeah, you can do that.
But you didn't do that?
I've got 30 days so far. I've been using it for weeks. So.
Oh, you're waiting until the end.
Yeah,
of
you can
you
can
you
go to the VMware
the
works. You can go to the VMware website and they'll give you a 30-day trial license so that you can try the full blown version. 30 days. Now, the VM player is free, but the thing with the VM player is that you have to use a pre-configured image. They do have some images on their website, like there's the FreeBSD one, there's the Ubuntu appliance, and there was a few other ones, Fedora Core. There was no Windows, obviously, because it's proprietary and closed, but you could conceivably download and try out the 30-day version, create an image in Windows or whatever operating system you like, and then export that to your machine that's just using Player. There is also a hack available for VM Player where you can take an ISO image.
Okay.
And use that.
Wow.
I posted that on the forum too.
Now, you could probably do that with a live CD, yes?
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool, man. If you're into virtualization, check it out. Now, personally, I want to check out Zen, and the other one is Qemu. Qemu? I haven't had a chance to check out those, but I hear good things about
them. Q-U-E-M-U?
Yeah.
What is it? Q-U-E-M-U?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zen is the other one.
I've used Qemu when doing Damn Small Linux. There was you can run Damn Small Linux right inside of Windows using Qemu, and it was really slow.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, VMware is fast. It's really fast.
Right. When I ran VMware, it was pretty impressive, and this was going back. When did we have that license, Link? Like 5 years ago?
3 years ago, right?
Oh, it's like 5-6 years ago. It was a long time.
Yeah, well, the current version is 5.5, and it just came out pretty recently. So, check it out, man. It's free. You could try it out, and if you don't like it, you don't have to buy it.
The only problem I ever have with VMware...
No, wait.
Go ahead.
I'm interested in hearing more about the VMware player thing because I haven't checked that out yet. And I keep hearing people talking about getting these images that they run through VMware player that and it's free, right? It's,
yeah, you can go to forever. You can go to the VMware website, and they have a section where you can. There's a whole bunch of pre-configured images that you can download. There's like Fedora Core, FreeBSD. There's Ubuntu. There's a couple other ones too that you can try out as well. And like I said, you can also hack it with an ISO image of any distro that you like.
So. Now, if you're running one of these VMware player images, can you go into that image and change the configuration stuff around? And
I think you can change
save the configuration.
You can change the configuration, but I don't think you can install new software after you create the image.
No way! I thought you can install new software, but you can't change the configuration unless you edit it by hand. Like if you edit the file, the configuration file. But I thought you could still. Your limitation is if you run out of space on that image,
that's
you
it.
Can't add more.
Yeah, because what happens is when you create an image, it asks you how much space you want to allocate for the image. So, you know, say you say 2 gig, 10 gig, whatever. Once you hit the limit, that's it. You're dead in the water. I think you can install new stuff on it. I got to try it.
Yeah, I think the only limitation is, again, the size. Now, if you want to make any changes to the image or any configuration changes, you have to edit the file by hand. Which, you know, isn't that hard if you know how to read.
Hexadecimal?
No, I think it's a text file.
Is it a text file?
Yes, I think it is. I do believe it is. And so it's definitely, you know, I'd be interested in checking it out. But then what am I going to run? I'm just going to run BSD or Linux.
You see, I have a need to run Windows, unfortunately, for my work.
Right.
You know, they got a whole bunch of proprietary stuff. They're really into, like, Lotus Notes where I work. And unfortunately, IBM hasn't released the Linux native client version of Lotus Notes.
I thought they were supposed to.
They've been talking about it for years, and it never happens.
You know, you got to wonder, what's the hold up there? Why not?
Who knows? Maybe they're getting paid off. Who knows?
Maybe we got to talk to somebody from IBM. Pat, get on it.
IBM.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We need IBM in here.
Now, is your laptop or your workstation, do you use a laptop at work or do you use a workstation?
I use a workstation at work.
Now, you had talked about, you know, did you install SUSE on your workstation at work?
No.
I thought you were talking about doing that.
No, I had a spare box, which was like my old machine, and it was just sitting there, so I threw Slackware on there.
Okay. You were talking about starting a SUSE.
No,
a lug at work.
Yeah, I'm going to try to start a lug at work. I've talked to some people, and what I'm going to do is just have like an informal session kind of thing at lunchtime where, you know, I'll make an announcement, I'll come in, I'll talk about Linux, you know, give out some free CDs and, you know, some bootables and let people try it out and see what, you know, what it is and, you know.
Because maybe work will allow you to purchase VMware.
Well, I actually was talking to some of the people in the education area, and it looks like they're starting to evaluate Linux, at least for possibly the developers, which I am one of. And they're talking about possibly Red Hat, maybe SUSE. You know, I was talking to some people that they were batting around an idea: what would it take to get a lab to do some testing? I told them it doesn't cost anything. You can download any distro you want, and you can do a dual boot. If you don't want to do a dual boot, just get a live distro, set up some configuration files in each of the local machines in the lab, you know, and just use a bootable. So they seem pretty receptive to it, and something seems to be going in that direction. So I'm definitely going to push it on my end, you know. I would kill to have any distro running on my machine at work. Any.
About the...
I'll take freaking Linspire. I'll take Fedora Core. I don't care.
XP distro from Windows.
That's already on there. And this is going to become
You're already stuck with XP.
This is going to become an issue. Like, you know, I recently got a new machine at work. They got like a Dell, one of those you know, business Optiplex machines, which is like a 2.8 gigahertz machine. It's a decent machine, but it's a cheap box. But it's pretty quick. You know, Windows XP. You know, once Vista ever comes out, you know, it's gonna get to that point again where, you know, these machines are old, and do you want to spend the money again to get another Windows license? Or do you want to keep what you have and, you know, extend it for a few more years, you know? It's the same thing what's going on now. And I really think, you know, if people where you work where, you know, it's mostly a window shop, you gotta play the bottom line that it's a cost-saving thing. You know, regardless of the FUD campaign that you see on sites where, you know, you'll see like, Microsoft says that even though, you know, running Windows saves you X amount of dollars over Linux. You know, that's bullshit. You know, it's total BS, you know.
Yeah, but how do you really feel about it, Pat?
Well, well, if I was in charge, you know how things would be. You got a good idea how things would be if I was calling the shots there. But I'm not, so I got to deal with it.
And on that note, how about we talk about Arch? Arch Linux, baby.
Arch Linux is great, man.
Arch Linux. I moved to Arch Linux on Friday. Started Friday.
What do you mean Arch Linux is great? You guys are bitching and it won't play AAC files. Or
that's Dan. No. That's MPlayer.
I didn't say Arch Linux. Yeah. I said MPlayer.
The MPlayer package.
It's not yet.
Yeah, the MPlayer package. So what did you guys like compile your own? Did you go and compile your own MPlayer package?
No. I just pulled it off of the Arch repositories. I didn't compile it yet.
What the hell is what kind of crap is that, man?
Yeah, that's
in
what
Slackware,
I said.
Where if it was broken, you would have made your own damn package. And
that's
fixed.
I didn't get. I was doing other things. Once I had. I'm not getting many files from you. That's the first point right there. So. I haven't had a rush to fix it yet. I'm sure I'll get around to either doing it myself or, you know, trying out. They'll have it fixed by then. It works fine in Zine. Zine or Zine?
I don't know.
Well, hopefully in a week or so, I'm going to have a new MPEG-4 recorder that I can try and see if that one doesn't have that damn buzzer hum in it.
Which one? From Norris?
Yeah, they're going to send me a new one.
Are you paying for it or are you getting it free?
I'm not paying for nothing, man. I'm giving them favorable reviews.
Oh, so that's it. If we give you stuff, you'll get favorable reviews.
Ah, that tooth comes out.
If it's good stuff, you get favorable reviews.
Payola.
It's a piece of shit. You're dead in the water.
If it's a piece of shit, then you lost your thing, and I'll tell everybody it's a piece of shit.
But, you know, Arch was really good.
I like it, man.
I mean, the install, all total, was probably about 3 hours tops. And that was, me it was finding and installing the packages I wanted, playing around with it. What I thought was what threw me at first is when I do a typical install of a machine, I tried the base ISO, which is not the smallest one but the larger one.
Uh-huh.
And both times I downloaded, for some reason it was corrupted. It would not boot. But when I just got the regular ISO and threw that in there and installed it, you just get the basic workstation. I think with, no X or anything like that. And then I installed all the other packages I wanted. Everything went pretty smoothly. I installed, what did I install first? Blackbox. And while in Blackbox... Not Blackbox, Fluxbox. While in Fluxbox, I decided to install XFCE and all the other ones and KDE and everything else. And when I came back and I exited out of Blackbox and I started up, I switched to Fluxbox or XFCE, damn thing wouldn't run. It couldn't find XFCE.
So what you have to do is go into that file and say whatever, start.
Well, no, I'm sitting there, I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I did the same thing for KDE. It would not find KDE. I spent 10 minutes trying to figure out, did they rename it? Did I not get a right package? Did I do this? Did I do that? I came over to this machine, and I'm like, where is XFCE on here? And then finally it hit me. They like to install a lot of stuff in Opt.
Yep.
Right. So, my paths only had, USR bin, and there wasn't a symlink in there.
Right.
They're doing all environmental variables and stuff, so I actually had to log out and log back in so that my environmental variables
picked up correctly.
Properly, and once I did that, then I hit start XFCE, it came right up. So I wasn't really aware, and I should have hit me, because when I started using, when I pulled up Thunderbird and Firefox for the first time, I couldn't run those either. I could run those, but they weren't. I had to fix my
configuration
my helper
file.
I had to fix my helper application that when I click a link in Thunderbird, it would open up Firefox properly, and my helper application was pointing to where my old Firefox would be. And I wanted Firefox to open when I could just click on open up a terminal or just use the run command, type in Firefox. And when I do that, it wouldn't work because Firefox was no longer in bin, USR bin. There wasn't a symlink in there. It wasn't in USR lib. It was over in op Mozilla Firefox. So I had to fix all that. Because, again, at that point, I hadn't logged out and logged back in to fix those environmental variables.
So you got basically your main workstation, you're running Arch.
Right, my main workstation's running
Ubuntu's
Arch.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Ubuntu's gone, Arch is in. Everything, I'm pretty much back up to where I was before. QDVD author was not available in the standard Arch repositories. And of course, my...
You didn't check the ARU. ARU is the secondary user repository.
I was not even aware of that repository until someone had mentioned it to me on my post.
There's also a utility called AR Build.
That's what I heard.
That automates the whole process.
So by the time I found that out, I was already halfway through QDVD author. And I started making or compiling and installing my software using the Arch system of generating a package. So while I do have Arch packages, they're not like official Arch packages.
What do you have, QDVD? You should submit it.
Well, I'm not done with it yet. I've had some problems with like DVD slideshow.
Uh-huh.
The install for that is not like a typical compile make install. It's actually you just run a shell script in there and it'll put the files where they belong. And I've had some issues with some type of with some of those requirements for QDVD author where it wouldn't really like make the package properly. So I found out, you know, I could do like the old way I used to make Slackware packages is I would, you know, compile everything. And when I did make install, I would direct it to a specific build location. So it would drop it all in this one directory and I'd have the tree underneath it. Then I just create the necessary Arch package files in there. What was it? The file list and the package info file. And I make that by hand. And it worked out pretty well. And then I create the package.
There is a QDVD author version in the ARU, but it's probably not the most current one that's in CVS, which you pulled down, right?
I pulled down the CVS. I compiled it, and it blew up. It would not compile. I sent an email to the QDVD author mailing list.
And Varalocan replied?
Yeah, and within, a half an hour, he replied and had a fix-up in the CVS, and I downloaded the latest CVS, and boom, I was good to compile, and it works perfectly. So, you know, two thumbs up to Varo there. I mean, he's really on the ball.
He is on the ball, Varo.
You say, you send him that stuff, and he sends you the fix right away. That's service, with a smile. The only glitch I have... No, go ahead.
So what is it, Dan? I'm completely transfixed and curious as to what it is about Arch that has made you give up Slackware.
Slackware or Ubuntu? I was running Ubuntu previous to that.
Slackware.
Like
it's obvious that Ubuntu wasn't doing it for you because it's just not. It's probably just not as hands-on or as configurable as Slackware was for you, but I'm interested to know why you did not move back to Slackware, but instead chose to pursue Arch.
Why have you left us?
I do like Slackware. I use Slackware a lot.
Get out,
still.
Bitches!
Yes. My system's at work. The server here is all Slackware. Why Arch?
Why have you forsaken me so?
I've heard so many good things about Arch. I've tried Arch out briefly, and it was really good. I like the package system for Arch. I like the repositories that they have. The community has some, you know, really good stuff. Everything I've tried on Arch has worked great. And I guess it comes down to just a lazy man thing. Instead of me compiling a lot of this extra software that I want that's not available in Slackware, unless I go to Linux packages or mess around with that, Arch has it all, and it works great, and it works perfectly, and I've not had a problem with it. 99% of the software I've used out of the Arch repositories. And, you know, it's that combination of a great package management system, and the speed of Arch is phenomenal. Compared to running Ubuntu, I notice it's incredibly faster. The boot up time in Arch is blazing.
Yep, 30 seconds.
I was really, really surprised about that. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's really, I would say, out of all the other distributions I've tried, you know, Arch and Crux are probably the closest to Slackware without using Slackware.
What I like about Arch Linux is that it gives you the control that Slackware or even Gentoo give you. You can do compiles like how you do Slackware, or even Gen 2, but you don't have to. The whole operating system has packages, and it's very easy to upgrade the packages. It gives you that element of like Debian or, you know, one of the other distros where you can just do, you know, instead of apt-get install, you do pacman-s, whatever the package name is, and it goes out and installs. You know, if there's like certain packages that aren't available, you can go to the AUR repositories and pull down the package build and compile it yourself, and it's pretty easy to do it that way. Or you can do a compile yourself. It gives you the control of Slackware in Gen 2, but you have the packages of Debian, just not quite as extensive.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say the packages of Debian, but you got a lot.
Well, that's insane, but it's almost like the best of both worlds is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, to get the audio and video stuff, and
it was really easy.
It was a lot easier and a lot less of a headache doing it on that than it was on Ubuntu or even Debian.
The problem with the Debian-based distros is all these repositories that these guys maintain, it's a fucking mess. That's what it is. You know, I was running Canonix on my main workstation prior to this, and it's a great distro, don't get me wrong. It's easy to install, it's got a nice setup. It runs pretty well. It's really easy. You can go in and pull down Debian packages. The problem is that it's based on Debian Unstable. And the last few months, Debian Unstable has been a complete freaking mess. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I think Arch is small enough that you're not going to run into a lot of dependency issues that you can run into. You know, and they've done a fantastic job of cleaning this up in the Debian distributions. But when you start going outside the main
Debian repositories,
you know, it's particularly, again, we're talking about the audio and video codecs and doing stuff
that
like
we want to do.
Yeah, it tends to be a little more problematic. If you're running bleeding edge Debian, it's a lot easier to get that stuff, but you end up with a less stable system.
The other thing I like about Arch is it's very simple and straightforward. Like, all your modules are in the etcrc configuration file. You go in there, there's a line that says what modules you're going to load up. You go in, you edit it, simple. It's real simple
right.
and straightforward, the way the configuration's set up.
The only problem I've had on Arch...
Okay, that sounds like Slackware, though.
It is very similar to Slackware. It is.
But you got a shitload of packages, and upgrading
right.
is very easy.
And I think upgrading a Slackware is pretty easy, too.
But it's easier in Arch, though.
Well, that depends. What are you upgrading? I mean, it's Soiret on Slackware. It's Soiret upgrade, and then you're done.
But that's not official, quote
Well, it's not official but yet. I think they're really trying to make it official. Or some people are making it official. Yeah.
Bye-bye, BinRev.
It's time to cut off.
We're getting cut off.
Of BinRev. But, you know, I love Slackware. Arch is really great. I think it's a great distribution. It's been a lot of fun. The only problem I had so far, two problems. One was I tried running KDE for a while, and while, you know, ran fine, it ran great, for some reason it didn't play the screensavers. It would never go into screensaver mode. And I like to see my screensavers come up in a random mode. Because that's the kind of guy I am. So, you know, that little frustration just prompted me to move over to XFCE. And XFCE has been great.
I've been running with KDE, and it works fine, man.
Right. And it might be because I've gone, my configuration files in my system still exist from Slackware. So I went from Slackware to Debian to Ubuntu, and now to Arch. All with the same configuration files and never really changed any of them.
Did you generate your new X.org file, configuration file?
Yeah, I did. I generated a new one, and I kept my old Ubuntu one.
Just in case.
And I compared the two and added some features. What I did have a problem with was some OpenGL stuff. It was running very sluggishly, which was odd, and I thought maybe it was still linking to some Mesa drivers, and it wasn't Mesa libraries. And so it was doing something funky, and one of the things I saw in their wiki was, you know, reinstall the NVIDIA drivers, and I did that, and after I reinstalled those...
NVIDIA was real easy, man.
Yeah, it was.
I did it like in 2 minutes, man. It was simple.
So everything, you know, I've tried on this has been pretty easy. The last problem I've had was with Thunderbird 1.5.
Now, what was the problem that you had?
I run, what is it called, Forumzilla for RSS aggregation, because I use that on my IMAP, and so I can run Thunderbird at work and see all the blogs, and I have it set to update the feeds automatically, and that, for some reason, that stopped working, the automatic updating of the feeds. So I actually either have to manually do that or shut Thunderbird down.
So you do your feeds through Thunderbird? You see, I do my feeds with Sage in Mozilla Firefox.
I used to do it with Sage. The problem I had was when I came home, I'd sit down on my machine and it wouldn't be, you know, my feeds wouldn't be synced on my machine over here. I go, you know, if I use my laptop, if I use Linux on my laptop, my feeds weren't synced with Linux. And then when I used OS X, my feeds weren't synced. And I tried using Snow News, which was great, but then if I wanted to bring up a page, it would have to bring it up in links. I wouldn't be able to see the information if I was doing it remotely. It was a pain in the butt because, you know, I had to copy and paste and I'd do all sorts of wacky things. I tried the online stuff, and while they worked pretty well, I ended up a lot of times with problems. Our service provider...
Feed on feeds.
Yeah, feed on feeds. They block a lot of blog sites, so I'd end up having to go through the filter all the time and turn on and off the filter to see different feeds. But when I put them in Thunderbird, I sit down, I have my Thunderbird open all the time here, I can see all the feeds in there. It's all IMAP, so it's all stored up on my server. So I get it, you know, if I'm at work and I want to check out what's going on the forum, I could just pop over there under Thunderbird and I can see it. Or if I'm over here using my laptop here at home, I can see all the stuff on as I could if I was at my main workstation. That's why I've pretty much been using Forumzilla. And I don't know. I don't know why it stopped working, Pat. I don't know why. Maybe what I have to do is just blitz this Thunderbird config and recreate and do the config and see if it still causes the problems. But then I got to transfer all over all my feeds, my subscriptions.
But you can back that up, can you?
Yeah, no, I do. I can back it up pretty easily. It's just I don't want to go through the hassle of doing that.
Wait.
What?
Now, wait a second. I must have missed something here. How do you, if you're using Thunderbird on different machines, how do you keep your RSS feeds synced up between locations?
IMAP.
What do you mean IMAP?
I'm using my mail server. I'm connecting through IMAP. Right?
Right, I know that. For your mail.
Right, but
you can't IMAP an RSS feed.
Yeah, you can. I have it saved into a direct folder under Thunderbird, which is all IMAP, and it's up on my... So when something gets put in that folder on Thunderbird, it's automatically dumped into the folder up on my server.
Okay, gotcha. And that will look at... It looks at your folder on
right,
your
as
server
if it was,
before it looks at the other RSS feeds.
Well, yeah. Well, the only one that actually pulls the feed down is my main workstation, which I have open all the time. So it's supposed to check the feeds like every half hour or 10 minutes to a half an hour, depending on the feed. And it'll pull down the latest information, dump it into those directories, which will get pushed up onto the IMAP server. And when I connect on the other machine, they all point to the same location. So it's just pulling the feed or the information in there. It's like it's just like an email in a sense when it gets dumped up there on the server. So it's like looking at, you know, different subfolders of my email client, but it's just pulling and putting that information in from the RSS feed right into that folder that I pull it up through in Thunderbird.
Can I just jump in for a second?
I'm gonna have to try that now because that's the oddest damn thing I've ever heard. That sounds pretty interesting.
If you want to try Arch out and you have problems installing it, one option that you can use is what's called Underground Linux. Judlin, who's one of our listeners, He's put together a guide on his website that you can purchase. It also comes with the Underground Desktop. What Underground is, it's basically Arch, but it's a real simple installer. It'll get you a whole system up and running like in 15, 20 minutes simple. He sent me a copy of this guide that he put together, and I was just flipping through it, you know, briefly, and it looks real nice. I'm going to read it up and get a little more into it and see how it is. But it looks pretty cool. I'll put the link up so you guys can check it out. This is Judlin. He did this. So if you want to try an easier way to do Arch, if you're a little intimidated by going in and configuring files by hand, you can use Underground Linux, and it'll put an Arch system real simple.
Yeah, I haven't tried the Underground.
Me either. I haven't tried it. He sent it to me, so I'm going to check it out. Maybe I'll try it on one of my test drives to see how it works.
Yeah, Link, remember when I was having a problem creating that initial folder to hold the subfolders on the IMAP server? And I think you
were the one. Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
And that's basically what I created that, and I've been doing that ever since under Thunderbird. Like I said, it's worked like a charm, except the problem I have now is, for some reason, Formzilla just stopped doing the automatic updating. Haven't figured out why. Maybe I got to play around with it.
We got to get
real interesting.
We got to get a Link to try out Arch.
Yeah, Link just moved to Ubuntu.
You know what Link's going to end up doing? Link's going to end up replacing his Ubuntu on his main workstation at home with Slackware, I think.
You getting tired of Ubuntu?
Yes.
Yeah, it's you know what? It's just a little bit too thick for me.
Ubuntu, it's thicker.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's just it's a little bit too heavy for me, and in order to combat what I perceive as being a little bit too heavy, I have switched to XFCE under Ubuntu, which, you know, I always liked XFCE, and XFCE makes Ubuntu work faster. However, XFCE makes Ubuntu feel like Slackware, so why not speed it up a little bit more and just install Slackware and run XFCE on it and be done, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, I don't know what the heck what makes some of those things a little slower, but there's a perceivable difference between Ubuntu and Arch and Slackware, actually.
It definitely is. I'll tell you, I'm sitting here using two machines right now. I'm using a 3 gigahertz machine, 3.2 gigahertz machine, running Ubuntu and XFCE, and I'm using a 1 gigahertz laptop running Slackware and XFCE, and they're both the same speed. So I'm assuming that if I were to put Slackware back on my main workstation, that it would be way, way faster than it is now.
Arch is smoking fast, man.
Yeah.
Arch is fast, man. Like, my workstation, it literally comes up, like, in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it is fast. I mean, it is. I'm not to bust on Ubuntu, because I've noticed that, too. I've tried out SUSE on a workstation at work, and I had to get it off of there because it was running really slow compared to Slackware on the same machine.
Oh, yeah, good grief. SUSE is huge.
And it was, you know, I was running the same stuff on Slackware that I was running on SUSE.
I got to try to do a kernel upgrade. I haven't done that yet. Soon.
For what? Arch?
For Arch, yeah.
Speaking of, there's a serious exploit there.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that, but, like, I didn't see that anywhere else.
I know. I've been trying to keep an eye out. I figured if this is really that serious, I mean, I thought that they would have updates out already. I mean, I tried Slackware, I tried Arch, I tried Debian. All
Nothing,
of them,
right?
There's been no update. Maybe there was one released today.
What's the exploit again?
Ubuntu did have an update today for the kernel exploit.
It did? Then it must be out
yes,
in Debian. And what did they update you to? 2.6.15.1?
I believe so, yeah. 15.1 or 15.2, I forget.
Because they're saying, like, every single kernel prior to 2.16.15.1 is susceptible. It is a... Because I haven't seen something for Slackware yet. I ran Soiret yesterday and today. I know I didn't run it today yet.
I just ran Soiret, like, 2 and 10 minutes ago. There's nothing.
Multiple vulnerabilities were identified in the Linux kernel, which could be exploited by remote or local attackers to cause a denial of service. It's an infinite loop in the netlink RCV SKB function when handling a specially crafted NL message underscore len value, which could be exploited by local attackers to cause a denial of service. And the second flaw is due to an error in a PPTP NAT helper that does not properly calculate the offset when handling an inbound PPT in-call request packet, which could be exploited by attackers to crash a vulnerable system.
So it's like a denial of service, basically.
Or something like that. The third vulnerability is due to an error in an PPTP NAT helper that does not properly calculate the offset based on the difference between two points to the header, which could be exploited by attackers to cause a kernel crash. Affected products, Linux kernel version 2.6.15 and prior. Solution upgrade to 2.6.15.1. And I haven't seen a lot of, aside from that post on LXR, and this is coming from FRSIRT, for, I don't know how to pronounce that, French Security Incident Response Team. It's about the only thing I've seen for this so far.
Well, it's getting late. Shall I do some Frapper shout-outs before we go?
Yeah, shout-out to Frappers.
Just a quick update.
Oh, wait, do you guys have anything to say?
Not a whole lot. Good night, everybody, because I'm going to bed.
Good night, Al.
I'm beat right now. So.
Good night, everybody, for me, too.
I got some bad news.
Shout-outs and say hello to some of our people.
I got some bad news.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
I got diagnosed with some tendonitis in my wrists.
Oh, yeah?
That's not good, which if I don't be careful...
Quit whacking off.
Could lead to carpal tunnel.
You know, my brother-in-law had to have surgery from carpal tunnel.
And one of the tests they gave me is if you take your thumbs and you bend them down into your palm and you make a fist with your thumbs inside...
Like this?
And hold your hands out straight and then bend your wrist down like this. Does that hurt?
I feel pressure.
If it hurts...
It doesn't hurt, but I feel it.
Like, it hurts right here, right at the top where the wrist bends. I can't do it because it hurts really bad.
Yeah. If you play guitar, you're more susceptible to it also.
Yeah, they're like, you know, you got to start...
Wearing those goofy braces.
Putting, positioning properly, your seating and everything.
It looks horrible, man. I see people work like that. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, so
you look like such dorks.
You know what? I'd rather look like a dork and be able to type.
That's true.
I can't play video games now. I got to take a break from all that stuff. I shouldn't even be typing tonight. I haven't been touching a computer all day. I shouldn't be doing anything, but like, I got to take a break. Take a break for like 2 days and over the weekend, not do any typing, not do anything. It's going to kill me, but...
You'll survive, Dan.
Just a quick update. Next week, our guest is Stephen Muatone from the iOS Project, which is a web-based operating system, so that should be interesting. That's next week. I've added a whole bunch of guests on the calendar, so check out the guest calendar. I'll update it as I go through it. Linux World Expo, we still haven't heard back from them. Link was so kind. He put a little link, a little button on the front page of our website, where if you click it, it'll open up an email client, and you can send them an email to the right people. I ask people, please do that for us, because if they see that people are willing to support us and they're willing to come out for us, if we're there, they'll be more inclined to invite us. So please do that. We really appreciate it. And with that, I'll do some shout-outs. We got Seth in Culpeper, Virginia. We got Adam in Corby, England. We got JA450N from Wharton, West Virginia. We've got Detsa from Berkeley, California. Brian Newman from Wilmington, Ohio. We got Bookaroo from Montreal, Quebec. Now, I believe Bookaroo, he registered twice, I think, so he snuck that one in. We also got Lyman Bird from Chesapeake, Virginia. Sly Bly from Belfair, Washington. Shikhar Das from Moraga, California. We got Bruce Herman from Freesboro, Tennessee. Vernon Van Dam from Johannesburg, Guten, South Africa, Johannesburg. Toby G from Beaches Creek, PA. Paul Hosler from Webster, Texas. And that is it.
That's it?
That's it for this week.
Yeah, I just ran Debian's app upgrade on, updated apt-get update and apt-get just upgrade on the server up there, and I didn't see anything for the kernel yet. Got me worried.
Well, like I said, they do for sure have it on Ubuntu. I just, in fact, I just upgraded my workstation while I was talking.
To reboot yet?
No, not yet. I will later.
Yay. I got to see if maybe it's... no, I did an update. No, I didn't do an upgrade in Arch today. Tried it yesterday. And it's, I don't know. Anyway, any last words, Link?
Last words. Let me think. Don't go to college and become a tech worker.
You'll be outsourced.
Be a doctor or lawyer or something like that where you make money.
Be an engineer or something.
Yeah.
Real engineer.
You know, a quick question for you, Link. Some guy sent us somebody sent us an email about a band. Two bands or something. Did you listen to any of their files?
I listened to one of them.
And?
A metal one. That was all right.
What was the song?
I think you should play it. Did you get the email that I forwarded you an email that had some promo stuff in it. Did you get that? I know you got it.
I played it at the beginning of the show.
Look for it and you got to... Oh, did you? Which one did you play?
The Linux Link promo. I'm going to play one of the other ones now.
Play the blooper, man.
I'm going to play the blooper right now. What of that band did you listen to? Because I downloaded of the one band. I downloaded four of the files. Which one did you listen to? Was it like?
All right, I listened to. Let me find it. Hang on. You talking about Place of Skulls? I listen to Never Die. Is that the one you're talking about? Probably not. You're talking about the one from My Music from Jimbo.
I think so, yeah.
No, I didn't listen to that one. I listened to a different one. I got some music from Judah, another one of our listeners. That I got to get over there. I can copy it over if you want to play out with it. It's some metal stuff. It's pretty good.
Oh, well, okay. Metal. We'll play it for next week. I'll just play out what I have here. I already got too much stuff. And,
all right, that'll work.
Everybody, enjoy this stuff here. Have a good day. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night,
hey, it's
everybody.
Tom McFadden from Tupperville, Ontario, Canada. And if you're looking for a podcatcher that just works... Use Bosch Patter. Potter. Fuck off. Bosch? Bash. What the fuck's the name of that thing? Bash Potter. Use it. It works. Spell it right in Google and maybe you'll find the fucking thing.
Such expletives.
Listen to this. I said a lot of repetitive.
Repetitive, yeah. I was getting numb this hand.
In what hand?
In this one. I was getting numb this.
What did you do?
I stopped playing guitar.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. You know I want to tap that ass, right? It's over.
The Nokia 770?
What about the Nokia 770?
Did you read the review?
I've been meaning to read the review, but no, I haven't. I read a review about it like a couple weeks ago before it came out. It looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's like you've got a web browser, you've got an email client, you've got a little note stylus to tap in and stuff.
Dan sucks.
He's a dick.
Video, you can play audio. It's got a wireless card.
I just listened to that Boss Patter blooper. It's funny.
I'm not going to buy one. $350.
Yeah, it's damn expensive.
I love it when people send us the blooper stuff.
I love it too. Link's still on the chat. I gotta go say walk Pat out because he's gonna need a hug and a kiss for his ride home.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm gonna shut off the recording. I'll be back in a few minutes.
All right, dude. Catch you later.
All right, have a good one, man. Bye.
Good night.
Alan's in the conference room.
Yeah, I know.
We need to test with a phone.
Well, let me call her again. Hold on, Alan. Talk to you in a minute.
Okay.
What's that song? What's that from? Dun 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 dun. No, it's Godzilla. Dun dun dun.
Gojira.
Dun 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 dun.
Gojira is stuck in Tokyo.
How many times does the phone have to ring?
Pick up the phone, please.
All right, Pat, I've had enough of these people. I'm going to call my cell phone. It's right there. God damn. What? Yeah, just press the green button when it rings. Waiting. Hello? No, press the... Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing today?
You sound pretty good.
Do you have an echo?
Nothing. Try talking on the other mic.
I got two mics now right in front of me. Maybe you'll get me in stereo. Okay.
He's not fine, man.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I think that fixed the problem. I turned down the monitor.
That's
the
trick,
man. Hello. It's Tim McGraw calling. We're looking for...
You're not looking for me, that's for damn sure.
We're looking for Caroline. Caroline.
I'll go down and get her.
We got a special gift package for her today. Two all-expense-paid tickets.
To Tim McGraw's concert in Nashville, Tennessee.
Backstage passes and two full days of nothing but Tim McGraw and his friends and family.
And the bass player.
Oh, God. You people are sick.
Now, would you like those to address them to Alan Metzler?
No.
Very well. We will send them to Alan Metzler.
But anyways, it sounds a whole lot better since we turned the monitor line off.
Yeah,
on
it's nice and clear, man. It was bumped up. It was like around 1, so I just turned it all the way down.
Yeah, it should be all the way off. I think it was one of the knobs I missed last week.
I think
last week, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
I think Dan didn't beat his kids enough this week, and they came in here again.
It's possible.
So how do I
hear how it sounds over the stream?
So how do I sound, man? I'm talking on the piece of shit $5 mic.
The Radio Shack one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds better than you do on the other on the Shure.
You know what I was telling Dan? I think I blew that microphone out at least once.
Oh yeah, I've known that for a while. Actually, the mics are coming. I've got to get some stuff done on my car. It's at the shop right now, so on what? It maybe what? Next week or the week after, but I'm not sure.
What do you think about lavalier mics?
I don't have a problem with them. I don't know exactly how they would sound, though.
That's the thing. I don't know anybody with one.
Yeah, the only one I have one that goes onto the Eye River, but that's all I have. I don't know that I
think
I have to dig up and see if I can get enough adapters to plug it into the mixing
board.
Need
a preamp, don't you?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. Like I said, it plugs into the Eye River. It's got a little box on that one, so.
Yeah, but those the one you're talking about, the Eye River, that's one of those low-level portable ones.
That's a high impedance one, yeah.
Right. I'm talking like a condenser type, the more higher end.
Oh yeah, professional.
Yeah, like a good one.
Yeah. Well, ideally, we'd all want professionals.
Obviously.
If we go with like condenser mics would be nice. Because we wouldn't have to be sucking up on a mic anymore. You could put them, put away from you and actually talk like normal human beings. It would be really nice.
It picks you up if you're, an inch away or like 2 feet away. It'll sound the same pretty much.
Yeah. The board supplies phantom power, although I'm not sure that it would be able to supply 4 mics with phantom power. But that's not a big deal to do. $99 gets a nice condenser one.
What kind?
Hey, it's Tom McFadden from Tupperville, Ontario, Canada.
Model number again.
And if you're looking for a...
Dan's playing promos over while you're talking. It's very rude.
I don't know. I never hear anything Dan's playing. That's the other thing I got to feed back in. Whatever's going on that side should be fed back into the board, too, so that we can hear, the guests can hear.
Yeah, ideally that's what we want. I think you would need
the problem is I don't think I have enough inputs for that. I think I'm 1 input short.
I think you need to do a submix for that.
Yeah, how we do that? Because the guests would then also be getting their voice back.
Well, there's a lot of things that have to be played around with. I'm not saying it's all perfect yet, but
goddamn excuses. Sick of your crap. You're fired. Never did us any good anyhow.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When you go really loud, go away from the mic when you do that.
Step away from the mic.
It just like blew up in my ear.
You're fired.
And it was just like... what the hell is that microphone I was looking at? Now I'm going to... Now that I want to actually find it, I'm not going to be able to.
Flash! Ah! Ellen of the Impossible!
I'm really enjoying Thunderbird, man. It's really awesome. 1.5.
I am, to an extent.
I thought you were talking about the wine. I heard you guys had like Thunderbird wine over there tonight.
No, no. If I'm going to drink some booze, it's going to be decent booze. My days of cheap crap are over. That's okay when you're like 18, 20 years old.
My days of cheap crap aren't.
Well, that's because you don't have a choice.
There's always a choice.
Hey, Alan, have you had a chance to check out those videos that I gave you on those DVDs?
No, actually, I haven't. I haven't even, unfortunately, I haven't even opened up my laptop case on it. I just, the whole weekend was shot for me. I was, like, crappy feeling, and today was, like, the first day I felt good. Actually, the day first day I went back to work.
Oh, you stayed home?
But, yeah.
Running a
yeah, I figure, since I get paid for staying home.
Hey, take them, man.
They pay me not to come to work.
Take them, man.
But it's either that or I sit there being miserable all day at work and
get everybody else
it's
sick.
It's not nice. The MXL 990 condenser microphone with shock mount.
What brand is this?
MXL.
MXL, never heard of that. I know Sennheiser.
Looks like a nice one.
Sure. What site are you looking at? You looking at like Musician's Friend or something?
Oh right. Well, this like I was picking this one off of the Roadhouse podcast. I don't know if you ever heard that one. It plays a lot of blues stuff. It's a weekly podcast. This is the microphone he uses, and I think it's got a really good sound to it.
Yeah.
Send
me a link, man. I want to check it out.
Yeah, he's got an Amazon link on there, which is I'll put it over on the
IRC.
On the IRC here, provided helps if I actually push the right button. Give me a second here.
Testing.
I have to dig up the site for it. This is the Amazon link for it. I know it has a site. Come on, you pain in my ass thing. Paste for me.
I've got a tickle in my throat. I'm going to stay home. I worked all day. I'm going to stay home. Link's not on the chat, is he?
No, not yet.
Yeah. Link was on the chat. He said something about he had to call work again. Oh, you son of a bitch. You're not going to do this for me.
Sell it, brother. Oh, I know what I need to do. What's today's day today?
Today's the 18th.
12.
118. January 18th, all day long.
11. 06.
So I set up that guy Rick Timmis on the schedule. That should be interesting, man. The guy's getting up in the middle of the night to talk to us in the UK. It's going to be 2 o'clock in the morning. He's going to get up and talk to us. How'd you get in contact with him, Dan?
He sent me an email. Yeah.
I had a burrito for lunch.
I'm glad I'm not there.
Especially when the heat kicks in Dan's room. Starts circulating hot air.
Yeah, I'm definitely staying. I'm definitely glad I'm not there tonight then.
All right, what was that? What was the promo I got today?
You can tell people are getting on the stream because suddenly you guys are starting to cut out now.
Really? Yeah, you could see as more people join the chat. Dan, what? Don't you normally like limit the connections on the main stream?
There's 10. It's limited.
You should probably cut that down, man. You really should. You need all that bandwidth to go freaking to the mirrors, man. Nobody should be listening to us directly.
Hey, Pat, go to musicians. For some reason, this isn't copy and pasting right for me, and I don't feel like typing out the whole thing. Go to musiciansfriend.com. And then search for MXL990.
Musiciansfriend.com.
And that'll bring you right to it.
What is it? MX?
MXL 990.
Oh, I got some gas today.
Storm. Okay, I see it. MXL 990 condenser mic with shock mount. A kit? That's pretty good, man. $50?
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like it's an interesting one to try. It's the condenser one, so we got to use the phantom power on the board.
Features 8.112, quality 8.43, value 9.2, overall 8.6. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
We should probably check it out in the store. If you want to go one day, let me know. I'll go with you. Maybe we could stop at one of the places over here.
Ooh, it's a date.
It's a hot date, man.
You have to find out whether they have it down at, whatchamacallit's there. Oh, my brain went dead.
Oh, my God, Dan. Oh, God.
I was wondering when that was going to hit you, because I'm
still
doing it over
here. Dude, burned something.
I did. I burned my ass.
Damn, what the hell crawled up your ass and died?
Pizza Hut.
Eat that shit?
Yeah. Too bad that you can't do smell over the asterisks there.
Oh, thank God you're not drinking any beers right now, man. If you were drinking like some Guinness, ugh.
The explosions over there.
It's chemical warfare, man. I'm going to have to retaliate.
Get a lighter out.
You ever do that? I remember when I was in grade school, some kid did that and he burned his ass.
I did it. I tried it once. You know, when you do it, you can't see it. Yourself. You can't see it.
The flame goes
out.
It's
not something you do by yourself.
Man, that really reeks. Man, you got spray or something? In the toilet?
But now with the discovery of videotape, we can record it now for you. There you go, Dan. A recording of Dan lighting his farts.
There's always that one idiot kid who does it. Check it out. That's pretty good, man. $50.
Yeah. Reading the review here, it's not too bad.
I like to hear it first before buying it.
Oh, I'm good, bro.
Here's a review of somebody. First off, I would like to clarify a few things about condenser mic. Unfair reviews by people who are inexperienced with condensers. Condenser mics almost always use phantom power. If they're not supplied with phantom power, they will give out a very quiet sound. So you need a power supply.
Well, the mic, the board supplies phantom power. There's a button over on the right-hand side.
Got to see how that is with four of us going.
Well, that's just it. I'm not sure that it would work well with all four of us, but, I mean, it's not...
It says this,
like I said, for $49, it's $49 versus $49 for the Shure ones I was going to buy.
It says this is not a truly professional mic. However, if you're an amateur looking to do a little recording, this mic will be a great improvement over standard dynamic and focal mics.
Yeah, well, that describes us.
Yeah, we should get good mics, man. I'd rather splurge an extra $50 and get a kick-ass mic.
Tasty. Should we start the show?
Yeah, why not?
You ready? Ah, damn. I'm going to be hacking up later. Oh, I hate that one.
It's like burning you out there, Dan.
It's his own farts that's burning him out.
All right, you ready? Here we go, Alan. We'll tell you when we're...
he can't even take his own farts tonight.
We're starting the stuff. It might be a few minutes longer because we got like a little promo thing that came in. But here we go. You ready?
Go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, testing. 1, 2, 3.
Talking
on
a normal volume here. See how it sounds?
Well, here, listen. Go ahead.
Check, 1, 2. We're talking on a normal volume to see what the sound is like. Hopefully it's not too loud and overpowering, and we'll see how it sounds.
Hello? This is the United States calling. Are we reaching anybody?
What's this?
My home. Three damn people downstairs. Nobody can answer the phone.
Dan, you didn't beat them enough last week.
Hello?
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 Hello, can you hear me?
It's echoing. Yeah, there's a bad echo.
This is the blog police. You haven't been posting to your blog.
Oh!
Oh, ouch.
Oh, see, the problem is that I work for a living now.
No excuses.
No excuses, all right. What happens? What do the blog police do if I don't post?
They're going to revoke your access.
They're going to revoke my what?
Your access.
Your rear access.
Ha ha ha. There's a really bad echo.
Okay.
All right?
All right, I love you.
Love you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Why is there a bad echo? What could be?
Let's try getting. See if Alan's on there. Go into the conference room.
Right. Hello?
Hello, and welcome to Asterisk Testing Service.
I like the Skype chick better, honestly.
Is there an echo for you?
Let me turn off the volume on the stream and let me.
Are we echoing?
Hopefully not. He's probably got a headset on. You see?
No.
Your wife is on the phone.
Well, I hope we're not going to be echoing.
No, you shouldn't be echoing. For some reason, I'm not hearing you in my headphones.
Alan, what normally causes that? It's because it's too loud, right? And it's feeding back?
In some cases, yeah.
You got to turn the effects and a little lower, right? Or the return.
There's monitor lines there. And box feeds out. That's how the monitor lines are what we actually get the microphone back over to the Asterisk box with on it. And the slider that's labeled PC over there.
I see Skype
right
Asterisk.
Yeah. On it. That monitor, I think, should be almost off because that feeds back into the system. So turn that one off.
Say something, Alan.
Say something? Anything. Ding, fries are done. Ding, fries are done.
Ding, fries are done.
All right, I'm going to play them back.
Welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message of up to 10 seconds. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
5, 1, 4, 2, 3.
Checking the volumes.
Eat me.
Talking together. Talk, 2. Dan. Speak.
I'm speaking.
Talking together.
Word.
Work. All right.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Nothing.
Waiting.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Skype call testing service.
Welcome to Skype testing service.
Please record a message of up to 10 seconds. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello.
Check one. Check 1, 2. We're
Hello.
Talking to Skype.
Skype.
Hopefully it works.
Hello.
Ringy dingy.
Ding dong a ling a ling.
I like the Latvian chick better.
Hello.
Lithuanian, whatever the heck she was.
Hello.
Check 1, 2. We're
Hello?
Talking to Skype.
Skype?
Hopefully it works.
Yeah, it works. All right, that works. Oh, wait, I got to play the playback now.
Yeah, let's hear the playback.
Oh, wait, wrong machine.